frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause when the old boys raised on shotguns, we say praise and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
butt and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you get access to not one but three separate chat rooms. So if you don't like the one you're looking at, go over to the next one. Anyway, we're going to talk about electric flight today on Mad Science, because that's a pretty cool deal there. Maybe one day you'll be flying. Who knows? You might have one of them electric quadcopter backpacks where you can just fly around and do whatever it is you do and stuff. Deliver your newspapers, you know, fly over somebody's house and drop it down their chimney or something. Yeah. What are you clicking on, boy? That's terrible for live radio. clickety-click.
You can actually hear that?
Click, yeah. Alright, so anyway, I posted some video links in the chat room for some electric airplanes and such. I was going to play some podcasts of some of these electric planes because the technology is getting pretty cool. But the biggest problem they got in electric flight is the same problem you have in electric cars, which is battery density. Charge and discharge rate. Making them, you can charge them up fast enough and all that kind of stuff. And then the actual weight of the battery itself. Now on the weight of the battery portion, you know, as opposed to like say the old lead acid batteries, that for obvious reason lead is pretty heavy, and you can't have too many batteries filled with lead and then water. I think never really measured out how much water is actually in a battery, but you know, if you got a gallon of water, I guess it's close to 8 pounds or more. Anyway, that's a lot of weight per battery. So you could be looking at, say, maybe 20 pounds, depending on how big your battery is, per battery. So then along come the lithium-ion batteries, which have a little bit of a flaw in those things right there. If through their normal process, the way they exchange the energy, they basically short themselves out. They can explode, man. Poof! Fire! And you don't want that going on while you're in the airplane. You don't want that going on while you're driving down the road. Nobody wants a wire fire while they're driving down the road or flying in an airplane. Hey, we could even talk about electric boats as well, man. Because anyway, just to get around, modes of transportation using electricity. Also in the chat room, Stephen Gibbons posted a link of a lifter that basically uses ion technology for using like static energy and negative ions to actually produce an ionic wind underneath it, which would cause thrust to lift it upwards and such. There's all kinds of technology in that. Basically turning science fiction into science fact. See, my patience is getting thin because I want us to move forward faster than what we're actually doing. We should already be there. I mean, after all, there were cars, electric cars back in the 1800s that a lot of people didn't know about. Would love to get a hold of one of those because I imagine that would be a really cool car to study. But nonetheless, on the plus side, the battery weight should be going down with the new technologies available out there, such as graphene technology. Robert Murray Smith, he's still working on battery technology using graphene and actually some hemp batteries as well. So if you can get the actual weight of the battery down, then that's a plus. The less it weighs. See, one of the things they mentioned in, like, say, the gasoline or, you know, jet engine fuel-styled, you know, airplanes was that they only put as much fuel as they need to take the trip, because the more fuel you got, you know, obviously the harder everything has to work to move it along, but the more you drive along in with your tank on just what you need to go, the lighter the plane gets. But with battery technology, you're going to be carrying the same amount of weight even by the time the batteries start to get low. So it's going to have a bad spot there somewhere along the line. But if you had really super lightweight batteries that had battery density to them that would allow the battery to be able to charge and discharge rapidly, such as in capacitor technology, which may very well be the best go towards actually running electric cars and electric planes and boats, you know, planes, trains, and automobiles and all that kind of jazz. Well, either way, if you have supercapacitor technology and you got superconductors and perfectly designed electric motors, even the style of which blades you're using or turbines for that matter, using some science like Venturi effect and stuff, where you're actually bringing in atmosphere as you're using that same atmosphere for thrust, you're sucking air in and pushing it out the back, that kind of jazz. So either way, it's exciting times that maybe someday might actually get us closer to the old George Jetson lifestyle where everybody's flying to and fro work. Of course, at an earlier conversation, Thomas was more worried about cars falling out of the air than he was the technology. I don't know what that's all about, because I would love to see cars flying everywhere. Now, I obviously don't want them crashing in my house, but I guess that's why we pay for auto insurance, in case they do land on your house or in your pool or something. Anyway, so the technology's getting amazing out there, folks. The digital technology and stuff like that, you know, everything used to be mechanical. And mechanical means you have to have more weight to it. Like, say, the difference between an old-style analog speedometer in your car as opposed to the new digital versions and such. And so we're getting closer to that whole Star Trek / Star Wars Space Age nifty gizmo period in history. That's what I'm looking forward to. I feel like I was born in the wrong era. I should have been born more ahead in the future, where I got already all these cool toys. I don't know, maybe it's just exciting to find them, right, guys? Are you guys there? Raymond? Thomas? Are you there?
Yeah, here. I just had my mic muted so you wouldn't hear my industrial air conditioner.
Cool. See, he's already got the jet engine style thing going on. Now, if we can get him an electric, all-electric deal that will move air around, you know, using, like, negative ion wind technology, and he's holding up a box kite. Box kites are pretty cool. Anyway, so we can get him...
Box kites pull really, really hard. They pull a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Have a wire to it, fire it up, you got all the electricity you need.
So, like, what if you was to take that box kite and put some really lightweight solar cells and some really high thrust quadcopter motors that would keep that box kite aloft just by the sunlight?
Exactly. That, and also some copper wire hanging off of it, sucking energy right from the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because many, many times, all you gotta do is take an insulated copper wire and run it up in the air, and it's gonna make electricity. And that electricity is very high voltage, low amperage, but high voltage. And like you always try to say, and you've been trying for years to tell people that it is possible to use high voltage. So you take the high voltage and make a motor that will run it, and all of a sudden the box kite does not need a tether anymore. It can fly through the air on its own.
That's why.
And the electricity it produces. Think about that. This is electric light.
That's why the all-electric generators haven't succeeded to this extent, because the problem that they got going on is they're trying to fight the back EMF, so to speak, or lens effect or whatever. They're trying to even fight against eddy currents in the types of cores that they use and stuff. Instead of taking that energy directly off of one generator, like, for example, they got red line generators out there. Been in existence for a long time. Power company uses. I actually used it on my all-electric bike, to where it's a 12-volt to 120-volt AC at 500 watts. Now, when you run this thing, obviously, it's going to drain more wattage and run that battery down rapidly because of the way that it's actually being used. Anytime you're trying to drain energy off of a system where let's say you got battery number one that is running the electric motor number one, which in turn is turning the generator head on the other side. Once you put a load to that generator on the other side, then that's when lens effect takes place, and the electrons start to flow back into the same generator that you're trying to pull the power off of, and then in turn slows down the electric motor by making it have to work harder, which generates more heat, and eventually something will fail. Either your load gets too heavy and the thing will lock up, and or on the opposite side of the spectrum, because it has to work harder, the battery or electric motor number one will drain the battery down rapidly, so that have to stop and recharge everything. Now, if you could utilize some of the technology that I was talking about in the form of plasma technology, which is nothing more than taking that high voltage and changing it into a completely different state of matter so as to not invoke Lenz's law, where you're sending electrons back into the same generator, Now you'd have the option to still be able to drain the power off, and you have the option to be able to change that power back into whatever form of energy that you need to run whatever it is that you're running, which doesn't make a direct coupling back to the generator head. Does any of that make any sense to you?
Yeah.
Well, imagine an electric engine. You got an airplane, you're flying through the air, and as this airplane is flying, the same motor that you're using for thrust is also the same generator that's charging your battery. Now, the first thing people would say, well, you know, because of that, when that airplane's using it for thrust, and as soon as you try to charge that battery, well, it's going to bog that thing down and become less efficient and run the initial battery down faster. Well, using what they was doing back in the late 1800s with the mercury arc rectifier, instead of using mercury, using any of the noble gases and turning it into plasma, you can turn that energy into a completely different form, not allowing that electron flow to go back into there, therefore rectifying that voltage, high voltage coming out of that motor and sending it into the battery in that form. So basically, you wouldn't be putting no drag on the generator, so it wouldn't even be affecting the electric motor, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. And so with that said, the faster you drive, the more high voltage you're going to produce, the more plasma you're going to pump into the chamber, and now you got not only heat energy, but you have the pressurized high voltage DC already rectified, ready to charge up capacitors, which in turn will bleed over into the battery bank or whatever, or maybe even just directly run from supercapacitor technology. See, all of this stuff isn't science fiction, it's science fact. We're already there. We've got battery technology that's amazing these days. I mean, if you look at the torque on your average cordless drill, these aren't the only tools out there. They've got sawzalls and skill saws and drill presses and everything that are essentially wireless battery-operated technology for, you know, work on the job site out in the construction industry. So the technology's already there. The batteries aren't perfect because they only have 1,000 cycles that you can charge them before they either A, develop a memory and don't charge up all the way, or they just basically go bad. So with modern day supercapacitor technology that's not working the same way that a lithium ion battery would work, then you have a better option as far as how to get these batteries to last longer. What do you think, Raymond?
I think you're right. I love it. Like you said, the technology is already here. It's a matter of going in the store, walk up to the shelf, pick up what you need, pay for it, take it home, plug it in, and play it. I mean, it's plug and play, man. We have all the technology we need. We could use more, you're right. But right now, we have everything we need. We just need to plug it and play.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of things out there that already, you know, shoot, there's plasma reactors all over the place that people, you know, don't look at. When you look at a fluorescent bulb starter, those are plasma reactors. You're taking the high voltage and you're energizing that gas inside there into the fourth state of matter, which is plasma. And inside those bulb starters is a little thermal switch. So when the plasma heats up that thermal switch, it opens and closes that circuit to preheat the bulbs. And then your fluorescent bulbs will light up. So that's why you'll see that those fluorescent bulbs, if you actually look at them, they're actually flickering because that switch is coming on and off as it's heating up and cooling down.
Alright.
So, anyway, that's already plasma technology. Even the fluorescent bulbs is plasma technology. You know, it's just taking that energy and if you can see, as far as on a scale, tungsten elements obviously are going to use more energy because it's a resistive load. Fluorescent lighting is going to use yet even less energy because it only uses the tungsten long enough to preheat the bulb, the gas inside the bulb, so that it'll light up. The rest of that time, it's all high voltage that is actually energizing that gas inside there, which is interacting with the phosphorescence inside the bulb, giving you a visible light.
It's UV rays that the bulb is actually creating, and UV rays cannot be seen by the naked eye. However, when UV rays hit a fluorescent substance, then it converts into visible light.
Yeah.
It's so simple, it's pathetic.
The LED technology, it doesn't require near the voltage. It only requires electron flow. All you have to have is electron flow for an LED. The reason why you have to put resistors on LED is because you're getting way too much electron flow, which causes the little tiny element inside there to get too hot and burn out. So it's really super easy to burn out an LED unless you've got a resistor on there that will resist any surges and such. But nonetheless,
if you use UV rays to excite phosphorescence materials, it actually uses less energy. The more light you create, the less energy you actually use. I have proven this.
Yeah.
Well, the time that I lit up, I took your example when I was up in Missouri with you the very first time you showed me that, burnt out fluorescent light. You could light it up with 20,000 volts.
Yep.
And you told me something that I thought was kind of weird. You said if you put the light bulbs in series, that you could light as many bulbs as you want. Well, I did that, and each time I put an additional bulb, it used less energy per bulb. It used more energy because there were more bulbs, but it used less energy per bulb, and I was getting the same light off of each bulb.
Yeah.
For example, the very first light I used was a T8, okay, and a 4 foot T8, and we're using 110 volts and a good bulb, you know. Anyway, it used, I think it was 28 watts for one bulb. I put two bulbs in it. It used 30-some-odd watts. But 30-something divided by 2 is less than 28. You follow what I'm saying?
Yep.
I did that until I got up to 15 bulbs.
But see, it gets better than that, though.
Wait a minute. At 15 bulbs, I was using less than 40 watts of electricity per, I was using less than 4 watts of electricity per bulb. I was using 40 some odd watts, but I had 15 bulbs.
Yep.
Well, bulb was putting out the same amount of light. I lit up my entire backyard with 15 bulbs at night, pitch black. I mean, almost no moon. There was clouds in the sky. And I could walk around my backyard, almost like it was dusk.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like daylight, but it was like dusk. I could see everything.
Well, that could have, with the proper engineering as far as electronics go, what was going on, when you get to, it's just like anything, like radio technology, when you send a radio wave through the air, those radio waves have to interact with a whole lot of stuff that produces resistance that is slowing that signal down, and so that signal can only go so far. But if you're able to take that same wave and basically do the same thing that they do for radio technology, like repeating it, or you know, bumping a signal right behind it, and you can push that wave out further through all that resistance, and you can actually speed that wave up, which will create that brighter light that you're looking for. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It's at the frequency range that you're running it that counts when it comes to, you know, plasma technology. And so the option to be able to run a whole lot of lighting off of one power source is only determined by the frequency range at which you're sending that signal out. And the signal that I talked about, like how a Tesla coil actually functions, where you're bumping the signal up from the primary, it goes up the secondary, energizes the secondary of the Tesla coil, Well, just before that wave gets ready to collapse, another wave comes in right behind it and sends it out even farther, and eventually all that energy gathers on the top load and pressurizes that top load that finally causes it to have to force its way out to the atmosphere in the form of breakouts, what they call it, where you see all those nifty lightning bolts on the other side. So that same technology, you could use solid-state circuitry to take transistors and resistors and such to build a circuit that would send multiple signals, one right after another, you know. And you can time them out perfectly so that you not only light 15 light bulbs, you could literally stretch them all the way around the earth and light every single one of them from one power source.
Right.
It's just the same exact concept as radio technology. Right now, we're on these computers and we're sending this signal out. Some of them's going on wire, some of them's going across the light systems like fiber optics, and other ones are actually being transmitted from one tower, from a repeater to another tower to a repeater, and bouncing these signals all over, and even telecommunication satellites as well. So this one signal is being transmitted in multiple different directions at all times. So what I've been saying all along about the plasma technology is just the same thing you're doing with radio technology. You're just moving energy from one spot to the next. And it doesn't matter what frequency range you're in, all this energy can be stored. It can be moved around fast. I mean, think about this a second. Think about, as soon as you say a word on that computer, how fast your words travel from me to you, for example. It's almost instantaneous. You know, we can have a real-time conversation because it's not like I got to wait 10 minutes for your response to come back. You see what I mean?
Right. I see exactly what you're talking about. It takes time, but it's fast. You don't really recognize it.
Yeah. And so if we're able to move energy that rapidly that I can have a real-time conversation with you, then that tells me that we can move electricity just as fast. And the best way to move electricity through a lot of resistance is using high voltage. Because if you look around, every single power line out there is using high voltage. They're using high voltage, high frequency that has to come down, go into a transformer that takes that energy, steps it down, and makes it where you can actually use it in your house. If you took the power directly off the power line, you'd fry every electrical thing in your house, including yourself, in order to try to use that electricity. You can't do it.
It wouldn't be anything left but a bunch of ashes.
Yeah. So,
your wife, your kids, just be a pile of black ashes.
Yep. So, what I'm saying isn't nothing that hasn't already been done.
Right.
So, with high voltage, which is pressure, and it will determine how fast you can move energy from one place to the next, and it will determine how fast you can charge and discharge things. You know, we could take and build the perfect electric motors that had built-in generators that would charge battery technology so rapidly that you'd never have to stop and plug that thing in. That's the point. What do you think?
I think you're right. What you're saying is so daggone correct and so ignorantly correct that I can't help but just laugh. You know, you're right. You're totally, totally right. I mean, it's wild.
Well, there's a video available out there. Excuse me, I had to take a drink of my coffee. That shows a guy that took basically a 20-pound car battery out of his car, put in a 2-pound boost pack of super caps, and was able to do the same exact job that the battery did.
Yeah,
he was able to start the car and then charge the capacitors up and then let it set and 3 days later come back and still had enough power in that capacitor bank to literally start the car again. That's impressive.
Yes, it was very impressive to me.
So
I saw the video myself.
So 2 pounds as opposed to 20 pounds makes a big difference, especially if you're talking about electric flight. So if all this battery technology, which right now they're using lithium ion technology, and that's going to be a little bit heavier, obviously, because of the materials that are being used in the battery, not quite as heavy as a lead acid battery, but nonetheless still heavy.
You know, you mentioned ships here a while back, or boats. You said boats.
Yeah.
But it's ships. Now, in a ship, weight is nothing more than ballast. Now, just think. Now, they measure the fuel aboard a ship in tons. In tons.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about these super batteries, super capacitors, super batteries, and this, that, and another. Just think. Now, for example, the Queen Mary. She travels completely across the Atlantic Ocean, right? The Queen Mary burns 1 gallon of diesel fuel for every 6 inches that it moves. What if it had these batteries in the same amount of weight as all that fuel?
All right, here's a fun one for you.
All right.
All right, take the old potato battery, for example. You
right.
take a nickel and you take a penny, you stick it in a potato, and you can register a voltage.
All right,
because you need those two dissimilar metals. You also have saltwater battery technology. Now, what's to stop a person from literally taking and building a ship, one side copper and one side nickel, and in between the copper and nickel is a insulator, such as maybe fiberglass, all right? And so you got this... basically split shift two separate types of metal, stick it down in the salt water, and instantaneously that boat itself becomes a battery.
Right. That's a cool idea. I like that.
And this is something that could probably be done on a small scale, especially with modern-day electric motor technology. Like, you can get on eBay and you can buy some little Chinese motors that run off of like 1.5 volts of electricity. And you could build a mini-scale version of a boat, half of it being copper, half of it being nickel, and the centerpiece being the, you know, that holds the two halves together, being a non-conductive material, and then set it down in a bowl of salt water and get that thing to turn. What do you think?
No, I don't think. I know. You're right.
And
it would work. It would actually work. It may not be a speedboat. It may not be a full skier, but it will work, and it will power the boat.
Well, here's the cool thing about it. See, with that type of technology, if you just had like a glass of water, or a glass of salt water, and you had two electrodes in there, one being copper, one being nickel, and you just let just that glass of water by itself go through the process of exchanging electrons, eventually the battery is going to need recharge because, you know, you done used it the whole process in that little area of water. But the cool thing about the ocean is that you will continuously have a fresh reserve of salt water in between those metals. You know, as you're driving forward, you're refreshing essentially the electrolyte in the battery. You see what I mean?
You know, I made a video. I had 5 coffee cups that hold anywhere from 4 to 6 ounces of water each, and I did exactly what you're talking about. I took, but I was using galvanized, which is zinc and tin. Zinc was what was doing it. But anyway, I had a piece of metal that was 1.5 inches wide and 3 inches long, and only 2 inches of it was in the coffee cup. Okay, so we're talking 1.5 inches wide, 2 inches long. In each coffee cup, I had a piece of copper that was about 1.5 inches by 1.5 inches square fastened to a copper wire. I wired these coffee cups up in series and lit an LED light 24 hours a day for 11 straight days.
See?
I mean, it works.
And see?
The thing is, the more cups, the more individuals you have, the more voltage you have. So, how you would do it on a boat, I don't really know, because if the size of your plate determines your amperage.
Yeah, well, see, you could literally design not actually as part of the boat, but an addition to the boat, like the left side would be your positive, and the other side would be your negative, and so essentially they would be multiple plates running series all the way down the lung of the ship, and as the water was flowing through there, putting fresh electrolyte in between the plates at all times, then you wouldn't have to basically have the ship made of two different types of material. You see what I mean? The center would be made out of a non-conductive, like you put your ship, put an insulator, like if it's going to be a steel ship, you put a rubber insulator over the steel ship so it's not shorting out the battery sides. You see what I mean?
I understand exactly what you're saying.
Nonetheless, it's still possible. See?
Yes, it truly is.
And so, with that said, since the ocean is salt water, you've got a permanently recharged battery. You don't even have to do nothing to it, man. You don't even have to put no charge to it. It's just the process. You know, when you put fresh salt water in with these electrodes, you instantaneously get electron flow, all right? Because it's the chain exchange of electrons between the two different metals. So
I think you made a mistake there. You said fresh water. No, it has to be salt. It has to be a water with some kind of electrolyte.
No. I didn't say fresh water. I said fresh salt water. You got a continuous flow of fresh salt water going through.
This salt part, I'm sorry. I missed that part. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Fresh water.
So either way, you got a continuous rejuvenation of your electrolyte going through the plates at all times, and so you'd be able to keep a constant flow of energy going through, you know, your battery plates. So, you know, there's a potential that actually it would be really simple for somebody to do an experiment such as that, where you just get a little plastic boat and hang a couple probes off the side of it, and then set it down in a bowl of salt water and see if you can get that bolt to produce produce enough energy to literally turn a little electric motor. And
right.
If you're not actually trying to do, like, you know, a propeller style, there's different ways of getting thrust. You could actually get it to turn a electric pump that would just pump a jet of water in and out of that boat. There's your thrust there. So there's multiple ways that you could actually accomplish this, which I think would be pretty cool. You know, you don't even have a propeller on this thing, so you don't have to worry about the propeller failing. All you got is a pumping system that is basically circulating salt water into your boat, putting some electricity back into the batteries, and then pumping that water out like a jet ski.
Yes.
And using nozzling technology like jet skis, you could actually aim the stream going out of the boat in any direction that you want, use it for turning and even reversing a ship or whatever. Yes. If you got a nozzle system under the boat that will allow you to go to a full 360 degrees radius, then you would actually be able to back up with the boat, you know. And it would be almost instantaneously change of direction if you did that, because you're turning all that force around in the opposite direction. You see what I'm saying?
You know, the thing is, if you put that nozzle, if you wanted to stern and wanted to bow, you could make this boat turn 360 degrees without going anywhere.
Yeah.
In the same spot.
You could have it spin on a dime. It could change directions right in one spot.
Literally on a dime.
Yep.
Holy cow, that's amazing.
So there's all kinds of possibilities. When we're talking about electric flight, there's so many different ways to utilize electricity as far as energy-wise. And it's not just that, you know. Heat rises, so there's a potential of actually using this in balloon technology and such. You could use electricity to actually heat up to the inside of that doggone balloon. You could use, they've actually got toys out there that the sunlight, it's basically like a black bag, and you don't even have to do nothing to it. You put it out in the sun, and the sun beats down on the color of the bag, which causes the air inside that thing to heat up, and the thing floats.
You know, Thomas has said several times there's different plastics, where if you took, like, for example, an automobile, and made one side of the automobile out of one plastic and the other side out of another plastic, as you were driving down the road, it would create or generate static electricity. Now, we all know that it would not run, make enough static electricity to run the automobile, but it would help charge your batteries, which would give you a longer range on your battery power.
Well, and that's the key.
If you had a battery that would propel your automobile at 50 miles an hour for 1 hour, well, if you had your car made of these two different plastics making static electricity, charging the battery, you might could possibly run 1.5 hours, 2 hours. You're not going to run forever on it.
Well, not
but
to...
you are going to run a longer distance. You're just plain and simple going to make it more efficient. Now, let's go back to electric flight. Why couldn't you make the bottom of the wing of an airplane out of one plastic, the top of the wing on another plastic, one side of the fuselage of one plastic, the other side of another? Duh, the entire airplane would be creating static electricity, charging the super modern light batteries.
Yep.
Therefore, instead of charging the battery and being able to fly from here, which is Dallas, Texas, to Norfolk, Virginia, now all of a sudden you could fly from Norfolk, Virginia to L.A., California. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, as the friction of the air is actually flowing across the fuselage of the body of the airplane, it is producing friction, which in turn is producing static charge, not to mention the flexibility of the material that you actually build the wings out of. You could actually embed piezoelectric crystals that would continuously, because people don't like to think about it, but when you're out there flying an airplane, those airplane wings are flexing in the wind. They're not a solid wing. They're actually bending up and down. And, you know, if you think about something flexing too long, you could actually break it in half, lose your wing because of the air, you know, flexing those wings back and forth. So imagine you got, you know, let's say like a carbon fiber or something like that, and inside this carbon fiber you actually have piezoelectric crystals that, as these crystals are being flexed, they're actually producing an electric charge. So the air flowing across, the flexing of the wings, any sunlight could pull in energy. There's so many different ways to gather it up. You see what I mean?
Yes, I see exactly what you mean. The wings of an airplane, they flex, but they don't flex very much.
They don't have to for piezoelectrics.
Don't want a whole lot of flexing. They want a lot of the cycles of flexing, but a very small amount. And if you flex it too far, it'll break.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, it could be done.
But
it could be done.
The materials that they actually use for like piezoelectric speakers are so lightweight that, you know, you could actually embed them into the wing without adding, you know, a substantial amount of extra weight to the plane. And you could actually use fibers of the material that you put in there for your, you know, like your positive and negative wires going down to whatever charging system you're sending this to. So, there it is, folks. The technology's there. We could literally take, if we wanted to, and design airplanes that would basically charge themselves while they were flying through the air. And at the very least, you extend the battery range. And at high frequencies, one of the reasons why batteries fail is because they build up crud on the plates. All right. Well, high frequency has been used for a long time to condition batteries to shake off any crud off of them plates, because of the range at what this energy is going across these plates. It's literally creating a vibration that shakes all the crud off and basically floats down to the bottom of the battery. And until the bottom of the battery or the battery itself gets all plugged up and shorts out the plates, then that battery won't go bad. But imagine if you had a possibility to literally refresh your electrolyte and flush out any crud that might fall to the bottom of that, so that it never has the opportunity to come up here and short those plates out. That's the key.
Yeah.
If you never cause those plates to short out because of the crud that flakes off or whatever, builds up in that battery and causes that battery to no longer function, those cells would never go bad inside a battery if they weren't able to be shorted out. That's plain and simple. The crud in the battery builds up until one plate hits the other plate and it's a dead short. Now you got one cell in your battery that's no good anymore. Won't hold a charge. But as long as those plates are forever separated and you keep fresh electrolyte going through there at all times, you could actually build filtration systems that you could pump your electrolyte out of the battery at, you know, certain intervals, while at the same time pumping new fresh electrolyte in the battery, and then you could filter off any crud that come off of that battery and keep that battery fresh throughout the entire deal so that the cycles, you know, would last longer. You see what I mean?
Yep.
And, you know, of course you're going to get the naysayers. Oh, I just got to add more extra weight to the airplane and stuff. Well, you know, there's types of materials out there that it's incredible, some of the strength. Because think about this for a second. Cardboard doesn't seem that impressive. But cardboard has a structure to it that basically uses geometry to make that cardboard stronger than it would have otherwise been as in the form of just paper alone. You see what I mean? They've actually built, you know, like pallets out of cardboard. They got...
Yep.
Because it's got like a honeycomb shape in there, you can get a lot of strength out of cardboard where otherwise it would have just collapsed under the weight.
Right.
So if you go and cut a cross section of an airplane and you see that this airplane wing is made out of aluminum, you'll see that replication of the honeycomb inside that wing that is acting as the core of that wing in order to keep that wing stronger. It's how we're able to use, like, aluminum tubing is obviously stronger than a flat piece of aluminum as far as strength-wise. You know, if you had a pipe sticking straight out in the, air or whatever on each side, and that pipe is obviously, because of the geometry, is going to be stronger than a flat piece of metal sitting out there because of the way that the structure is made. The flat piece of metal would bend faster under the weight.
You know, for example, a 1-inch diameter aluminum pipe, that's 3 inches. If you split it and flattened it out, it'd be 3 inches wide.
Yep.
If 10 foot long and you held it by the end, the pipe would sit there rigid and stick straight out where the flat piece of metal would be sagging. You're right. It's geometry.
Well, that's what we got.
A sheet of cardboard. Say, for example, make a cereal box. And you cut you a 1-inch strip out of it, 10, 12 inches long, and it's flat. And you've held it out, it's going to sag. But if you roll it around a pencil, it'd be rigid enough you could drive it through anything.
Even
you could
something.
Actually roll it up tight enough to where you could drive it like a nail through a 2x4.
Even something as simple as a piece of paper can be strengthened just by, let's say you got a flat piece of paper and you're holding, a couple grams of weight on there or something, you know, that measure it out about how much weight that this could actually hold across a couple blocks, right? And then you take that same piece of paper and you put it in an arch form. Now that arch is going to hold more weight than that flat piece.
Yes.
So, the materials that we got available to us, even 3D printing technology. I was looking at those things that Thomas printed out, and they actually got a honeycomb shape to them inside there. And they're pretty rigid. They're pretty sturdy. You know? Is it as sturdy as, let's say, a solid piece of aluminum or a solid piece of steel? Obviously not, but the weight factor in there is a big difference. So if you're building an airplane, you could 3D print an airplane and put whatever embedding spots that you want in there for whatever piezoelectrics while that thing's a flex in, or even embed the solar panels into the wings themselves so that while they're up there in the air, the sun can beat down on them. Modify the electric motors to be actual motor generators at the same time.
Yep.
It's all possible, man. We're not talking about science fiction. We're already talking about proven technologies out there. And
the end of the show, we're not talking about science fiction. We're talking about science fact.
You know,
it is fact. That's why you say, do you believe me? No, I don't believe you. I know damn well you're right. You are absolutely 100% correct. It is no longer science fiction. It is science fact. If you know the science and you know the what is the rules of engineering, thermodynamics, physics, then you know it is possible. Technology is already here.
We could use graphene battery technology, which already exists, and 3D printing technology, which already exists, and you could literally build the body of the airplane to be the battery.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm excited, but I'm kind of bummed at the same time because I feel like we should be so much further advanced than what we are right now using existing technology. We should be able to do some really cool stuff. Now, granted, there's a lot of independent researchers out there that are making things and proving things. You know, some of the best technology actually comes from the independent researchers as opposed to big corporations. You know, big corporations go around, they find these people, and they hire these people, and they put every bit of their information under their label, and now they own the technology. You see what I mean?
Well, at least it's out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I came up with something really profound, I wouldn't try to hide it. And I wouldn't care who took it and made a dollar out of it. Just as long as it gets out there and gets used. I'm all for helping the people. You know?
Yeah.
You know?
See, the batteries...
I share everything on YouTube that I do. Everything. Even my mistakes. And the reason I share my mistakes, my brother has chastised me 15 or 20 times. Well, nobody wants to see you mess up or make a mistake. Well, yes, they do, because it keeps them from making the same daggone mistake. When I make a mistake, I say I made a mistake. Here's what I did wrong.
Yeah. Anyway, the modern day battery technology, lithium batteries are pretty good, but the graphene technology and the newer battery technologies where they're using like a solid electrolyte in between, they're getting incredible. And the charge and discharge rates are getting incredible. The supercapacitor technology is getting incredible. One of these days, when the battery technology actually catches up to the electric motor technology, brother, you're going to see some cool stuff. And I honestly believe that at some point they're going to accidentally give everybody free electricity without even knowing they did it. Because you can't keep this technology in anymore. It's already out there. There are already suggestions of batteries that will last 3 times longer to 10 times longer than the lithium ion battery. That's impressive.
It's not necessarily the battery as much as it is the battery and the way you use the electricity that is stored in that battery.
Well,
what about your electric wristwatch? I mean, somebody told me, well, you have to change the battery every year. Huh? The last electric watch that I had lasted 5 years on one battery. I never charged it up and I never changed it out. 5 years.
Yep.
I'm keeping fucking time.
Yep.
I mean, it's all the gearing mechanism, all the design and whatever that made the hands move to keep the tire. I mean, duh.
Well, I'm saying the only reason why I'm even talking so much about batteries is because right now we rely on a lot of current flow in order to do the work that we're doing. And so you need a battery with storage capabilities that can keep up. You know, like DC power's got a lot of torque to it. That's why electric cars are performing so well.
And that's why you keep talking about plasma so much. Because plasma does not require a lot of current.
That's right.
A voltage, but not a lot of current. And yet it can be used to do work.
And so all...
It can be used for is making generating visible light.
Yeah, all you're doing when you're using a battery is you're storing the battery so that you can keep that flow up. But I see no reason why using existing technology and plasma technology that you can't get energy transfer real time on demand that would give you more than enough power to do the job. That's right. The point. And if you had the capabilities of being able to put out enough current flow that would run the inefficient motors that they got today using plasma technology and transfer of energy. See, folks, you got to go back to the basics and think about this real hard for a second. When you got a generator, and I've said this many times, you start that generator up via gas or whatever, wind power. Once you turn around and decide you want to use that energy that is coming off of that generator, then you turn your light bulb on, the electrons make a path right back into the same generator you're trying to pull power from. And science says for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. So for every light bulb you turn on, you're going to put that much pressure forcing against the energy that you're trying to use to get work done. And so if you never invoke that law, you never allow energy to flow back into that generator, you can pull the energy off of that generator, move it into a completely different state of matter, and then use that electricity. That's the whole deal in a nutshell. And that's why LED technology doesn't bog down a generator like a tungsten element would bog down a generator, because an LED is going to allow less electron flow back into the generator. Some electron flow through even an LED system. If you light up enough LEDs, you will bog that generator down until the generator finally drops on its face. But there are thousands of LEDs going to have to be put into place in order to bog that generator down as the equivalence of a tungsten element bulb. You see what I mean? It's all about the path. You know, tungsten elements are a resistive load that require some resistance to the electric flow in order to cause the friction, which in turn causes the heat, which causes the light inside the light bulb. LEDs only require electron flow. They don't require any resistance in order to produce that energy. What they do is when the electron flow interacts with the materials inside of the LED, it releases photons of light. Light is heat and heat is light. So even LEDs will get warm. So at some point, let's say a million, you can put a million LEDs on one battery and you can only put maybe 100 tungsten light bulbs on that same battery. There's a big difference. You know, and once you understand that, you understand that from the tungsten element to the fluorescent light bulb to the LED, you have staged down of how much electron flow actually makes it back into that battery or the generator that you're using to light the battery with. So with plasma technology, you're able to take that energy, move it to a completely different state of matter, and because of the pressure and the way that all this is working inside there is no way for the electrons to be able to flow back in the other direction. The pressure is too high. It can't It's like jumping on a boat with a fast moving river. If you're on a slow moving stream, you can go against the stream with little effort. But if you're on a raging river and you get on that and try to paddle upstream, good luck, brother. You ain't going to be able to do it. The faster you paddle, the harder you paddle, you're still going downstream. You can't go back against that pressure. And that's the same thing that happens with electrons. When electrons are in that rapid stream going in the opposite direction, they can't travel back, so the chamber becomes pressurized. That high voltage pressurized plasma technology just sent high voltage DC out of whatever path that this thing can go out of. And if you never was releasing that energy, at some point you would pressurize that chamber until it popped, just like a balloon. Simple as that. But even at that point, you would never send electrons back in the other direction. It's physically not possible according to basic science and physics. It's not possible for those electrons to go back the other direction because the pressure is going one way. What do you think?
I think you're right.
So, you know...
I know you're right.
If we figured this out... If we figured this out in the late 1800s, and we designed the mercury arc rectifier to turn Tesla's high voltage AC into high voltage DC to run elevator motors, do you realize how much voltage it takes to run a DC elevator motor? How much current flow?
A lot.
Yeah, so they were doing this back in the late 1800s with the mercury arc rectifier. Really? Now, we got nifty little plasma balls that we can set on the top of our table and look at them and interact with the plasma energy inside there by putting your finger up there. It's going to follow a path because that energy is trying to find a path to somewhere. All right, and because that outside of that glass is being bombarded by atmosphere, that's why you see all those fingers reaching out trying to grab something. They want to go somewhere. That energy is building up inside there and wants to go somewhere. It can't go back where it started, otherwise the system would fail. But, so now that pressurized energy's out there with all these fingers reaching out and trying to find a path. The moment you put a path for that, the energy will come out. If you think I'm wrong, take a penny, put it on top of your plasma ball, and tell me how long you can hold your finger on that penny. That's a mercury arc rectifier made into a nifty little toy using something less dangerous than mercury, obviously. You don't want to breathe mercury gas if that thing cracks, but with argon or any of the noble gases out there, it will dissipate and the process stops. There's no more plasma going on out there. However, if the circuitry still worked inside that little gizmo, you would be able to put your finger down close to it and still get a plasma burn off of the high voltage that's coming out of the circuitry. Pretty impressive stuff, man. So I'm saying, if we take this technology that's already in existence and we utilize it properly, we could literally design a motor generator, electric motor generator, with modifications such as an adapted plasma reactor system on there that would only, that its only purpose was to control the frequency of what the energy is and to basically transfer the energy from one place to the next. All we're doing when we do anything, including charging batteries, is transferring energy. It's all the same energy, it's just in different speed ranges. And, you know, don't matter whether it's coming from the sun or the wind or whatever, you can take that energy. Radio waves out there are energy. All of it can be, if it can be picked up on an antenna, it can be stored. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
And there is a reason why they tell you not to stand next to radio towers.
There are also the same reasons why all of your metal power poles, electric poles, are grounded. If they weren't grounded, you walk up and touch one, put your dink in your watch pocket. Huh. I mean, come on, man. I mean, you know, the city of Louisville has a city ordinance against wind turbines. And the ordinance reads, you cannot use wind power by any means to generate usable electricity. That's the wording. That is the wording. Yet they turn right around and ground all the metal power poles. They ground all their flagpoles, their metal flagpoles. Why? Because they're generating electricity by wind power.
Well, if you took that same tower out there, the same existing tower out there, and you grounded the feet of that, or you separated the feet through like an insulator so that it's actually not grounded. The pole, that the tower itself is not grounded. And then you plugged a ground wire into the dirt and then you reached over and you held that ground wire and reached over and grabbed a hold of that plug. You'd look like one of those hot dogs that sat on the barbecue grill for too long.
Yeah. Here's the thing. you plug, you take the groundwater from the pole, plug it not into the ground, but into a capacitor.
Yeah, you could turn that. You could turn every single radio tower out there into a charging station.
Yes.
Just by the static energy that's built up. You know, the atmospheric group, they got four poles, 250 feet in the air. They got a strand of wire that's not grounded to the earth. The strand of wire comes down into a capacitor bank, across the spark gap into a capacitor bank, and then that capacitor on the opposite side is grounded to the earth.
Right.
And so there they go. They're using essentially the power of lightning, static electricity, to pulling 2,000 volts out of the air, and on the opposite side ended up with 9,000 volts.
The thing is, you just said something causing me to think, but then I lost it. I'm getting old.
Well, I think we all are. But nonetheless, you could take every single tower out there, and there are methods to modify every existing tower. You know, when you got, let's say, a couple hundred foot tower or higher, and it comes down and it's bolted into the concrete, which is stuck down in the earth, the body of that thing is grounded to some extent, even going through that concrete. However, if you look off of all these towers, they have guide wires coming down, and those guide wires are also staked into the ground. If it weren't for the way that those guide wires aren't there just to keep the tower from swaying back and forth and falling over. Those guide wires are also there to ground them to the earth so that they're not pulling in lightning bolts every 5 seconds.
Alright, there you go.
So,
you know, people don't realize that the world is a big place and there are lightning strikes. How often does lightning strike worldwide?
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, somewhere on this earth is a lightning strike.
Are you serious? There's over 300 lightning strikes per second worldwide.
Yep.
300 per second worldwide. I mean, come on, folks. The thing is, you don't want to catch lightning and try to store it. You want to catch the stored electricity in the air before it forms that lightning bolt. That's the whole secret. Everybody was, for hundreds of years, they wanted to capture lightning. No. Pull the electrons out of the air before it formed a lightning strike.
Well, you could use it in real time. That's what I'm saying.
Right. Yes, you can.
And
that's why I'm a hot.
And since the Earth is a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions, then you aren't never going to run out of electricity. Unless the Earth stops doing what the Earth is doing, if the molten core cools down and all the atmosphere stops spinning around and you lose all friction and you lose all seismic activity and all this stuff that keeps everything on this Earth mixed up, you will never, ever, ever be able to run out of electricity. Never. It's not possible.
You can't possibly use, there's not enough people on this earth to use the electricity that is generated naturally.
That's right.
I mean, the electricity that's generated naturally by nature.
And we ain't even talked about the sunlight.
More than all of mankind worldwide needs or can possibly use.
We got thermoelectrics, we got solar, we got wind power. All these alternative energy sources aren't necessarily alternative energy sources. They're what nature's been doing for thousands of years on this planet.
Thousands and thousands of years.
So, when I say to the world, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it, or you don't understand basic science. So you could take a penny and a nickel and stick it in a potato and get electricity, or stick it in a lemon, grapefruit, anything that has citric acid or any type of acid for that matter. Causes a reaction, a chemical reaction that causes electron flow. You got mechanical forces such as the wind, you got light, pressure, heat, thermal vents all over the planet. You got the waves coming in and out. You got seismic activity all over the planet. You got Mother Nature throwing 300-mile-an-hour winds at the side of your house when everything's getting a little bit out of hand. And that ain't even counting hurricane technology that could be tapped into. Man, if you can't find electricity, free electricity, if you can't find free energy, you just got your eyes closed and your mind shut down or something, because there is power everywhere.
Yep, we're swimming in it.
Yep.
Every second. Every microsecond.
And you know what's funny about the whole deal, Raymond? What's funny about the whole deal is that even though we're talking about generating energy and stuff, in the process of generating energy and utilizing that energy, because even the laws of physics clearly state energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So whenever I produce energy, I send it out into a completely different form of energy, such as a radio wave, a microwave, or sound wave, or whatever. All I did, I changed that form of energy in the process of utilizing it. I didn't destroy it. I just moved it from one point to another. So that's why I keep using the terminology such as energy transfer, because all we're doing is taking what nature's already providing and transferring it and getting work done in the process.
And the thing is, it wasn't free. The energy was free. It was the machine, the apparatus that you had to build to change that one form of energy you could not use into usable energy. That's the whole secret. People don't realize the energy is free.
That's right.
It is the machine, the apparatus that you need to build that costs money. Now, what you have to do is use your head to build the machine to where it'll produce usable energy.
If you paid $100,000 for your house,
right,
and you stacked a stack of papers on your desk, and the wind outside is blowing from the south to the north, or the north to the south, whichever direction you're facing, whatever, if you're sitting there and you're minding your own affairs and you got a window open on both sides of that house, the wind will travel through your house, blow all that paper into the floor and all over your room, and then out the other side of the house. You didn't take none of that wind away. You didn't take none of that energy away. All you did was deflect that energy. And regardless of whether it was work that you wanted done, it got work done. It blew the papers all over the floor.
You know, the thing is, a lot of people think our ancestors were really dumb. Then they were smarter than we are today. Because in the old days, they always built houses that had 10 and 12 foot ceilings. Your windows went from 6 inches from the ceiling to 6 inches from the floor. And then you had window sashes where you could lower the top of the window, or you could raise the bottom part of the window. So on the shady side of the house, they would raise the lower part. On the sunny side of the house, they would lower the top part. The sunny side of the house would get hot. The air in the house would get hot. It would rise. The cool air would come in and take its place from the shady side and go out the hot side. I mean, that was like natural air conditioning.
Yep. There is in existence right now motors that use absolutely no electricity. And so, with that said, that requires a little bit of explanation, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, if you look on top of a roof, there's this little turbine that sits up on top of the roof. And if you go out there in the doggone middle of summer, the wind ain't blowing at all. But that thing is still turning. Why is that? Because heat rises, and as heat rises, it creates its own current, and it's able to literally turn that, and, you know, you got a mechanical motion going on. Nobody put no electricity to it.
Perfect example. Yes, you're right.
Well, there's no reason why we couldn't use that same process in order to build thermal convection style generating systems.
Wait a minute. They did exactly that in Spain about 5 or 6 years ago. They built a tower that was closed. It was just a piece of pipe sticking straight up in the air, a couple hundred feet high. They took some opaque plastic so that the light would go through it, but it would heat up. And the light would go through, heat the air, then the hot air would come up, hit the plastic, and it was shaped like an upside-down funnel. And all that hot air would run to the center and up that piece of pipe, and then they had wind turbines inside that would make electricity. They learned, they didn't think about it, but they learned that once they got it up and watered, they put in an irrigation system to water the plants, because they put the plastic high enough that a man on a tractor could drive around and actually farm that land, because there was enough light coming through to grow plants. But once they watered it one or two times, then the irrigation system was useless, because the water would, because of the heat, it would go up and hit the plastic, condense, and rain down on the plant. So they were using the same water over and over again. And then, think about it. It was a side effect.
Well,
if
you've ever been out on the beach during a hot, sunny day and walked across the sand barefoot, you would notice that sand is really hot. All right, now, if you went across the beach that by chance had black sand on it and tried to walk across barefoot, you're going to get a surprise.
A big surprise.
Yeah, because it's going to be extremely hot. And so, out there in the science world, they've got these things that they call salt reactors, where essentially you get molten salt. You liquefy the salt, and they use that for thermal heat. Well, there's technology right now that you can buy off the store shelves, where you can buy black sand and you could buy table salt and you could buy clear tubing that would allow you to fill that clear tubing up with black sand and table salt. A 50-50 mix would be perfect fun. You just put the black sand inside there, you got the table salt, and you got this tube that's standing out there in the sunlight, and as the sun is beating down on that black sand, it's heating up that salt. And if you got a copper tubing running through this entire system, you just built yourself an electric hot water heater. A heat transfer system that would transfer the sunlight to the sand and the salt and be able to hold that heat in there for quite some time, even after the sun went down. Just like a thermos. Because while that salt and that sand was in this closed system, then that energy would continue to be up there. It'd be just like a thermos. You would hold that heat in for long periods of time. Now,
hey, wait a minute. So this, how about not put it in a glass tube? How about making something that like or similar to a solar panel? In other words, you take a 4-foot by 4-foot piece of glass, and you put about say a half inch, and then all of a sudden you put not piezo, but peltier devices as the back, and then heat sinks on outside of those. Now all of a sudden you let the sun shine on this salt and black sand. It gets super hot. The peltier devices are hot on one side, and now on the other side it's in the shade because the peltier devices are solid and it's got heat sink. So now you're making electricity with peltier devices.
That's right. And plus you can also regulate them so that those doggone Peltero devices would not reach their thermal breakdown point by circulating water through that same system through like a series of copper tubing. You could.
What you just did is make my idea more efficient.
Yeah.
You're making electricity and getting a byproduct of hot water that you can heat your house with at night.
Yeah.
I mean, during the day you're making electricity running your air conditioner. At night, and you're out in the desert, it'd be super hot in the daytime, it's super cold at night. So now all of a sudden you're making electricity in the day running your air conditioner, and you're producing hot water for heat at night. Come on, man. This is too unreal.
At least in the 1960s, probably even prior, because I never really looked up the actual dating of thermos technology. Thermos technology, back in the day, whenever I was a kid, they used to have like a glass tube inside of a metal container, and when you pour your coffee in there, or even cold liquids, it would, because there was a air barrier between the metal and the glass, would keep your coffee. If you put it in there hot, it would remain hot. If you put it in there cool, it would remain cool for long periods of time.
You know, I don't want to have anybody angry at me about some blonde jokes, but one of the blonde jokes I heard years and years ago is they asked her, Bob, what is the smartest thing that you know of? And she said, a thermos. And somebody said, well, why do you think a thermos is so smart? She said, well, you put hot things in it and you keep it hot. You put cold things in it and it keeps them cold. How does it know?
Well,
how does it know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's science, man. It's technology. It's science.
But my point with that was, if you built huge storage tanks, exactly using old existing technology such as thermos technology, you could take this water and you could heat it up in these storage tanks and you could keep it hot all day, all night long. And until you take that energy off of that storage tank, it's always going to remain there.
Yep.
So, folks, I don't understand what the big problem is. I keep saying...
Here's a very, very simple experiment that people can try at home. You take a gallon jar, right? Then you take a pint jar. You fill the pint jar with boiling water and seal it. Well, when you seal it, you glue a string to it. You lower it down into the gallon jar to where it's about midway. Put the lid on the gallon jar and then vacuumize the gallon jar. Put it in your freezer, in your refrigerator. And 48 hours later, take a laser thermometer and check the heat. Put it in your freezer for 48 hours. Take it out, and you will not lose more than 2 or 3 degrees of heat.
Well,
heat will transfer through a vacuum.
Proof of concept is during the wintertime, thermoses, people put hot stuff in thermoses, and during the wintertime, even when it's colder than heck outside, their coffee is still warm when they pour it.
Yes.
Yeah. So, using that technology, that's a simple way to transfer energy. All you're doing is taking what the sun had provided during the daytime, using that to generate heat, and using the wind, the temperature difference between the wind and the sun, you could actually use that for thermoelectrics. There's so many different possibilities, it's just ludicrous. We don't have an energy crisis, we got a common sense crisis. Somebody obviously did not pay attention in basic science. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about this right now.
Right.
The whole misnomer of fossil fuel out there, you know, the industry out there, they got the money, they got the power, they got the infrastructure in place right now. But I'm telling the average Joe out there, if you're tired of paying for energy, then you need to pay attention to the basic science that's been right there before your very eyes all your life. Think about the things that you've took on your picnics with you and modify them. You know, take and build your doggone thermal storage unit. You know, thermal storage unit could be a simple concept of taking, you know, a coffee can and a glass jar and putting the glass jar inside the coffee can, and whatever warm water you want to keep warm, you pump into that glass jar and then use the coffee can as the air barrier insulation, just like your double pane or triple pane windows out there, and you store that heat energy in that glass jar until it's needed for a hot bath or whatever. All we're doing is moving energy. That's it. And knowing the difference between the frequency ranges, we can move the energy in rapid manner. Properly engineered, you could build an electric engine that would be so incredibly efficient that it would barely take a drain off of the batteries. And at that same process of utilizing the engine, while that rotor's spinning around, it's also charging the secondary coil inside there that is putting a high-frequency voltage out the other end, running it through a plasma chamber and then down into your battery load so that it never invokes the lens effect and it doesn't bog that electric motor down. So you're getting the thrust that you wanted to move your airplane. You're getting power that's going back into the battery. You're using technology such as wind and solar and static electricity, radio technology, and all that kind of stuff. Every time you key up on the radio, you're sending energy out. And you can turn around and capture some of that energy on the way through while you're talking on the radio to put back into your battery. It's as simple as that. I did this video called 9 Volts. I also did a video called Unsubscribe, 9 volts and unsubscribe, where essentially there is no batteries in this entire system, and I showed how energy actually travels. You got a large container, a smaller container, then an even smaller, and then smaller and smaller and smaller. It's like an Olympic-sized swimming pool. If you got an Olympic-sized swimming pool of water, and you got smaller containers down there, and each one of these containers are already full, once those things are full, until that Olympic-sized swimming pool goes empty, then all the rest of them will be able to run whatever load they're on until they finally get drained down. So, as each one of the smaller loads are draining down, your Olympic-sized swimming pool is also draining down. But because of the volume of the energy inside of that swimming pool, it takes a long time before that Olympic-sized swimming pool gets empty. And once that one gets empty, then the next one in line will get empty. It will go down by stages, from larger to smaller. So with these large capacitors all the way down to the smallest capacitor, when it's finally all said and done, the LED will shut off, the piezoelectric will keep going because it takes a less amount of deal. But through this entire process, you witnessed on Mad Science on Shaziz's YouTube channel that energy, I could show you which way that energy was flowing with these capacitors, and there were not one but 10 separate 9-volt loads running off of the same system simultaneously through the entire deal, and they would shut down in sequence to from larger to smaller. So as long as that Olympic-sized swimming pool never went empty, then all the systems below it would run forever. Now, if you look at the static electricity that comes from the air, such as what they did out there in the atmospheric group and what we've been talking about, radio towers, those radio towers would be continuously feeding in to that that Olympic-sized swimming pool. The wind generators would be continually flowing in to the Olympic-sized swimming pool. The solar panels, electricity from solar panels would be feeding into the Olympic-sized swimming pool. The thermal vents from the Earth would be feeding into the Olympic-sized swimming pool. The sunlight producing heat would actually heat up the water inside the Olympic swimming pool. So all this energy continuously flowing in from every single possible direction, continuously adding water or pressure or electricity into this. And it doesn't matter. You can trickle charge a battery. You can basically drip water into a pool. It may take you longer with a drip to put the water into the pool, but nonetheless it continues to add volume. And since there's an empty space in the Olympic swimming pool, it doesn't require any pressure to put that energy in. You're just dropping it in. So radio wave technology is going into the Olympic-sized swimming pool. Every bit of energy that Earth has to offer is adding to that system. If you go look at my video series called Unsubscribe, you will see a perfect example of exactly what I'm talking about. It is taking energy such as negative ion generation, static electricity, it's taking galvanic action from two dissimilar metals such as a copper ground rod and a galvanized ground rod, putting galvanic energy into it. It's picking up through a germanium diode radio wave technology, which is charging the capacitor bank. It is using earth battery technology. It is using solar power. It is using wind power. It is using everything that nature has provided, and it has done so for well over a year now. Go look at the very first video. You will see that that thing to this very day is still lit up using nothing more than dead batteries and all the energy that has been surrounding it. How do you get a dead battery to store energy? Okay, let me tell you. Every battery out there has an electrolyte, and it has a positive and a negative plate. When that battery goes completely dry, absolutely no electrolyte involved in it whatsoever, you can't charge it it's a standard mode of charging like you would a regular battery. It's a different type of reaction. However, it still has a negative, it still has a positive, and even though it's bone dry, it still has atmosphere between it, which is now what? The dielectric. Which right. makes that battery now a capacitor and will store a static charge.
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
So I proved it. In the video series called Free Thinkers, I've proved it. Energy is free. I did it with junk. It's got wind generators. It's got solar generators. It's got thermal electrics. It's got solar power, solar cells that shouldn't even be working. The ones that you brought out that are all rolled up like carpet and now they're all flat, but all the glass is cracked and they've been in the rain, they've been in the snow, and they still work.
Yeah.
And so that and using thermal heating from, if I got a box sitting down there that basically when the sun's out, heats up the inside of that box, which produces a heat pressure that then in turn goes through a hose, and since heat rises, it goes up through a little turbine, and the little turbine spins because of the heat. Then as that turbine is spinning, since it is an aluminum and there's a separate type of metal around there, the friction of the atmosphere going around and that thing spinning around actually produces a static charge.
Yep.
And inside of one of the systems, it actually has a static electric generator using different plates. If you go look up lid motor does a bunch of them, little pill, static electric pill bottle motors and generators. He's been showing years how you can actually make little motor generators using static electricity. So everything that nature has provided is involved in, and then some inside this system. And I've still had stuff to it, but nonetheless, go back and look at the first date of the first video in the Free Thinkers series, and you will see that that thing has been running for that long. Now you go out there, turn your dome light on in your car, shut your car, leave your dome light running, and go out there the next day and try to start your doggone car. Go ahead.
You are so correct. I mean, man, it's unbelievable how many different ways there are to collect, not produce, not generate, not create, but produce electricity into a usable form. There's so many ways. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like you and I both have agreed and said on the show many times, if you're not, if you can't find free energy, you have got your eyes closed and your ears shut and your mind is shut down, because there is no such thing as energy that is not free.
That's right. And if I'm able to do it with junk, then that means the average Joe could do it as well. And once you understand how static electricity works, then you can understand how to capture it. Once you understand how wind power works, you can understand how to capture it. Solar power, everything. They made solar panels out of all kinds of stuff. And,
yep.
You know, thermal exchangers, thermal heat exchangers, we use an inefficient system for our air conditioning. There are methods by which you can bury a culvert pipe 6 to 10 feet under the ground and have one end out there in the air and the other end up underneath your house. And you can circulate hot air from the outside, which goes down underground, cools down, comes inside your house, and now you got cool air coming into your house. No compressor necessary, just some form of fan or maybe even not even that. If it's windy outside but still hot outside, the wind power will blow that pressure through.
Right.
It's no electricity involved. If you've ever been next to a waterfall and you stood there and you got cold and had to run out into the sunlight, then you completely, if you have been thinking about it, missed out on an opportunity. You got a waterfall that now uses evaporative cooling, that if you was to tap a pipe right behind that waterfall, You would never even interfere with that waterfall, but what you would do is be able to take that cool air from behind that waterfall, pump it up inside your house, and lessen your electric bill, because as long as it's cool in your house and your compressor never kicked on, then you wouldn't have to pay the bill.
You just reminded me of a situation that happened to me about, eight, 9 years ago, maybe 10. I was in Mexico in the desert with my in-laws. I don't know if everybody knows me, my wife is from Mexico. Anyway, I was down there visiting my in-laws, and my mother-in-law and five of her friends were sitting on two park benches facing each other under two trees. They were all sitting there sweating, had short sleeve, thin blouses on, real super thin summer dresses, and they were all wiping sweat off their foreheads and their faces and talking and laughing and cutting up. Well, the thing is, the wind was blowing about, I'd say 5 or 8 miles an hour, but upwind from them was a cinder block wall about 6 or 8 foot high. So the wind wasn't getting to them, but it was blowing through those trees. So I just simply walked over and got a garden hose, put it on spray, and sprayed the trees. Well, the evaporating water from the air going through the trees was causing cool air, and the cool air was coming down to where the wind wasn't blowing and dropping on these ladies. So help me, Shazid, I swear. Within less than a minute, all six women got up, went home, got a sweater, and came back.
Well, check this out.
They weren't used to the cold. They were used to the heat. I mean, it brought the temperature like 10 or 12 degrees. Instantly.
If you're in the middle of the doggone desert,
yep,
and the sun is beating down and it's hotter than all get out, well, you could design a system that would basically have water inside there that would heat up. And the only pressure, only reason why you'd even want to heat this water up, because why would you want to do that? It's already hot outside. You got this water boiling. It's going, it's got to go somewhere. That energy's got to go somewhere. So it pressurizes up a tube, and then it hits a condenser, and then it falls back down into a tank that turns around and drips that water down just like a waterfall. There's where you got your cooling going on. So you just made literally a system that transferred the water from just a water state to a gas state, moved it up the pipe, crossed over into a condenser, cooled down just enough to be able to turn it back into water, drain that water down, and as that water was falling down, it did two things. One, it produced static electricity, and the other was that it produced a cooling effect that you're standing next to that mist coming down there. You're cool, and everybody else is over there on the other side sweating.
You know, the thing is, what you just described, the way you described it, is exactly my idea of a desalinization plant that you could build, put it on a floating barge, put it out in the ocean, and desalinize salt water and make electricity at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, all you have to do is put a U-shaped pipe in the air, insulate between them. One side going up is in the sun. The water gets hot, goes over, and comes down the other side, which is in the shade, it cools. But here's the secret. If you go more than 32 feet, you go up like 34 feet, then the water doesn't transfer over. But by pulling that vacuum and pulling that water up that high, you've reduced the boiling point of the water to the point it's now at the top of the water level at 32 feet. The water is literally boiling and turning into steam. That steam is crossing over, leaving the salt behind, and on the downside comes fresh water. Now, you put it on a barge that's made of concrete, and your water level in the barge is lower than the water level of the ocean.
Yep.
All of a sudden, the barge is full of fresh water. You follow what I'm saying?
Yep.
And the barge, if you fill the barge level full to the ocean with fresh water, the barge would actually float with the water level in the barge higher than the water level of the ocean, because the fresh water would not be as dense. It would not be as heavy as the salt water.
Yep, and for those out there who don't understand how you can get electricity from falling water, then go and look up the Lord Kelvin device.
Right.
And you'll see how that was actually a process that was done. Or basically go to your kitchen sink with a balloon and fill the balloon up, and turn the water on just a small stream, rub the balloon on your head, and then watch as that balloon interacts with that stream, either pushing it away or attracting it towards the balloon or vice versa. You will see how static electricity and water interact with each other, and then you'll understand how the Lord Kelvin generator actually functions.
What I was describing, the best way to say it is thermal siphoning.
Yeah.
You are thermal siphoning fresh water out of seawater and creating electricity at the same time.
You can actually thermal siphon water out of the ground by pumping it using a thermal siphon. If you, I did a video quite some time back called Thermal Siphon, I believe. I can't remember, but I think that's the name of the actual video, was Thermal Siphon, where you're actually heating up water and it causes it to produce pressure, which in turn goes up and it siphons water out the other side.
Right.
So either way, knowing a little bit of basic science, knowing a little bit of basic physics, there you go. All we're doing, folks, once again, is moving energy from one point to the next. Now, if you've got a high electric bill and you have a little bit of land that you can have access with, you could use multiple different things. You could build you a landscaping waterfall outside and put a vent behind there that would actually bring that cool air into your house, lessening how much your air conditioner would actually have to go. And if you understand that cold air falls and heat rises, then you can use that concept by putting your air conditioning in the ceiling and your heater in the floor and get a more efficient use out of it. So now you got this beautiful landscaping waterfall out there that you're using evaporative cooling in order to cool your house down. Or you can take and add to that system by putting a huge culvert pipe buried underneath the ground, and you know, you can even hide it into some beautiful landscaping, bringing hot air from the outside, going down in underneath the ground, cooling it down, and also going up to the ceiling and basically cold air falling once again. There are so many different methods that you could utilize in order to make your air conditioning so incredibly efficient that you don't hardly ever have to turn it on. Now, if you got a roof and that doggone thing is getting so doggone hot that it's just mind-blowing and it's making your house hot and having you have to use your air conditioning more, you can use a few techniques such as painting that roof with some reflective material so that it will reflect that heat off of there. It's obvious on a black roof that it's going to be a whole lot hotter. Your air conditioner is going to have to work to keep up with that black roof when the sun's beating down. Now, if you think I'm wrong, go find a house that's sitting in the shade. And half the house is in the shade, the other half isn't in the shade. And then go check out the temperature difference in each room. You'll notice that there's a significant difference between, say, the room on the south is the room on the north, that the sun's beating down on the north side, but not the south, because the south side's underneath the trees. You'll see a big difference in temperature. And if you took that heat off the roof to use that heat that's actually on the roof, and you use that heat to heat water up that you in turn turned into steam, and then took that steam through a condenser and used that steam to, when it condensed in, to use evaporative cooling to blow back through your attic, you'd keep your attic cooler, and then that cold air would fall down, thus lessening the time when your air conditioner actually had to be on. We have the capabilities right now to build the perfect houses, the perfect energy efficient houses. There is insulation out there that is mind blowing as far as their R factor of how much heat they will keep out or how much cool they will keep in, vice versa. If you want it warm in the winter time, then it'll keep the heat in. If you want it cool in the summertime, it'll keep the cool in. So the existing technology is already there, folks. It's been there for a long time. It's just a matter of utilizing it. Heck, nature provides a lot of materials. There are houses out there that they made out of literally things around them. They called earth homes.
Uh-huh.
And the walls are thick enough that they got an insulation factor to them that if it's cold outside and you keep a little heat inside, it'll be warm inside. If it's hot outside and you keep a little cool inside, it'll be cool inside. You can literally build a house using nothing more than what nature's already provided. Let's say hypothetically you got a cave on your property that's underground, and everybody knows that it stays a constant 65 or somewhere around degrees in that cave at all times because it ain't getting no sun. Huh?
More like 58 degrees.
Well, whatever the temperature, that's still good. But nonetheless, you build a house out of mud and straw, and you pipe that cool air out of that cave in through your house, and now what do you got? You got a perfectly engineered house that you didn't have to pay to keep cool. You just transferred that energy from the cave to the house, and now you got free air conditioning.
All right, think about our ancestors when they were settling out in the Great Plains. There were no trees. So they couldn't cut trees to make log cabins. They couldn't cut trees to make lumber and build houses. So what did they do? They cut sod. Sod is nothing more than dirt with grass roots in it.
Yeah.
They cut the sod 16 inches wide, 2 inches deep, and they stacked them. Well, now, this
like
sod,
bricks.
You have a 16 to 18 inch thick wall of dirt, right? The 16 is 18 inches is perfect because during the hot part of the day, the walls would heat up. Therefore, at night, they would lose that heat again on both sides. So it would keep the house warm at night and cool during the day.
Yep.
The temperature of a house in the Great Plains was always 12 to 15 degrees difference between the inside and outside. At night, it was 12 to 15 degrees warmer inside than it was outside. During the day, it was 12 to 15 degrees cooler inside than it was outside.
Well, in Australia, I can't remember the name, but we posted a link about a week or so ago. There is an underground city in Australia in some of the nastiest area where the heat is just terrible. Essentially,
yes.
The desert. But right. they live in the desert, underground, and are doing perfectly fine using these technologies that we're talking about. The basic concept.
One of them owns an air conditioner.
Nope.
They don't need it. Why would you spend money for something that you don't need?
Yeah.
I love it. You know, the thing is, we talk about free energy and how to use this, use that, and so forth. Damn, I'm getting old. Anyway, what we're doing is discussing how to use what's already there, what's free.
Yeah.
With no problem. We're not trying to defy the laws of physics. We're trying to take science and use the laws of physics.
Yeah, let's say.
In its proper way. To make things more efficient, that's all.
Let's say you live out on the Great Plains, and because you've got hardly any shade trees around, it's hot all the doggone time, but you do have access to a natural lake that has a natural spring underneath there. The temperature of that lake is going to stay cool all year round because of the doggone natural spring. You could take and pump water out of that lake and through an evaporative system that would only utilize the water long enough to transfer cool from that lake to your house and then funnel that evaporated water right back into the same lake without ever causing any environmental problems. If you only had a pond but it wasn't spring fed, you could do the same exact thing. Even if that water was hot because it's a shallow pond, the hot water would already be a plus for you. It'd be a negative for the fish because it's a shallow pond and fish don't like hot water for obvious reasons. But nonetheless, for you, for air conditioning purposes, you've already got it preheated. You run it through a solar heater system, which causes a thermal siphon to bring the water up to a height and then drop it down into the equivalence of a waterfall. And now you have an evaporated cooling system that runs off completely off of nature, using nothing more than what nature's already provided. It's already hot outside. You just took the pond, borrowed some water, got the air conditioning you wanted off of it, used the heat exchange, and then turned around and funneled that water right back into the same pond. Pretty cool, huh?
Yep. Real cool. I love it.
So if anybody ever wants to try this on a scale of, say, like a small community or something like that, I would be more than willing to assist anybody in explaining everything necessary to do what it is that needs to be done, to where you could turn your house, your property, into the most efficient, using the least amount of energy and using the least amount of finances in order to do it, using what nature's already provided. You know, there's these little critters. Hold on a second. Let me get this thought out. There's these little critters that are obnoxious sometimes, and I find them all over my yard. And it drives me insane. Because you go outside, and these little critters have built these little mountains right in the middle of your yard, and you step on them, and you get clay all over your doggone shoe. But what these little critters just did was they made a pipeline from some water source to bring water in. You see what I'm saying? Crawdads. Yeah. They dig tunnels everywhere.
Yeah.
They already did the work for you. Borrow that work. Right? Let them dig all the holes they want. Pump the water through those pipelines that they just made for you, and, you know, use it for evaporated cooling. What do you think?
I love it. But what I was going to say, it's not exactly what you're talking about, but it's pretty close. A simple, very, very simple experiment anybody can do. Take a small solar panel, okay, put it in the sand, put your multimeter to it, and see how much electricity it's producing. Now take your garden hose or a spray bottle, whatever, and wet the back side. You cool the back side, it will actually produce more electricity. But at the same time, it's going to heat that water up. So if you had your solar panel with the water behind it, okay, it's going to heat the water up, thermal siphon over in the shade through a radiator system that's going to take that heat off, and it actually thermal siphons the water. You don't need a pump. You're using Mother Nature, the rules of physics, rules of thermodynamics. You're using them properly to make your solar panel produce more electricity, but at the same time, you're producing hot water.
Well,
and now this water can heat your house at night.
If you took and built a frame about the size of your solar panel, most solar panels, if you look at them these days, that the big ones, the 200-watt ones like you brought out here, those things are about the size of your average shower door. If you built a frame, a watertight frame, that you could put the solar panel inside of the frame, and then you could fill that up with water, you'd have water not only on the front, but you'd have it on the back as well. Basically, the solar panel itself would be submerged in water. Right?
Exactly.
They will be just fine. And so the heat off of the solar panel would actually warm that water, and, you know, you could take that water and put it into, let's say, your swimming pool. You'd have a heated swimming pool. And believe it or not, during the summertime, even when the sun's hotter than all get out, there are some pools you don't want to jump into because they're too cold.
Yep.
And so you could keep that swimming pool to a comfortable temperature where you're still getting and you get the cooling effect of being swimming in a comfortable temperature pool. You know, my brother lived in Florida, and even in Florida, they have heated swimming pools for a reason. Because non-heated swimming pools take a long time to get warm enough for you to want to swim in them. And overnight, they lose that heat that is gathered during the day. So early in the morning, you go out there and jump in the pool when it ain't got no heated system on there. You're going to freeze your cojones.
Think about this one. Take 2 feet of black garden hose, or even dark green, you know, some dark colored garden hose, 200 feet of it. You put a 12 volt pump that you can buy on eBay for $4.59, free shipping. You put the pump on it, now you hook it to a 12 volt battery that has a solar panel on it. Now you put a thermostat on the pump and you can do your water. You can actually regulate the heat of the water in your swimming pool, and you put the pipe, the hose, on top of your house.
Yeah, but if you just wanted...
He did it. And guess what? He had to put the thermostat on it because it made his water, if he just run the pump continuously, it made the water so hot you couldn't get in it.
Yeah.
He made regulation-sized swimming pool.
If you want to do this without any electricity whatsoever, all you have to do is take that same black hose and not put any pump on it whatsoever. Just allow the thermal siphon to occur, because once it gets hot, that pressure is going to take the least path of resistance and the heat is going to go out into your pool, causing a current flow that will circulate the water by itself back through the pool. So you don't even need an electric pump to heat your pool.
Here's the thing. Think about this, Benny. You could also put a filtration system in there.
Yeah?
Well, now you're not using as much electricity to pump your water through a filter. This is helping. It wouldn't do it. It wouldn't filter by itself, but it would sure as heck help.
Well, using a thermal siphon in a ground filtration system where you sunk the filter lower than the pool, not only would the weight of the water pressurize the filter because it's at a lower level and create its own siphon, but the thermal heat of the hose heating up, transferring that heat to the water, would cause the water to go back into the pool. And so you would get a circulation through your filter, around, heat your water, and bring it back into the pool and be able to regulate your temperature that way.
Right.
So there you go, man. We just taught you how to heat your pool for free with no electricity. How to filter your pool for free with no electricity.
You know, think about this. If you took some large bubble wrap and laid that, you know, paint one side with silver paint, put that on top of your swimming pool, it would heat your water in the wintertime, and at night you could recirculate that water through a radiator system in your house with a fan on it. You could actually heat your house at night in the wintertime. But the water would still be warm enough that all you have to do is fold the bubble wrap back just a little bit and use your swimming pool like a jacuzzi in the wintertime.
Yeah. Speaking of jacuzzis.
In your swimming pool, you could swim anytime you wanted, even in the wintertime. You'd have warm water to heat your house in the wintertime. I mean, come on, man. In the summertime, you could put a set of thermostat on it, on your pump, and regulate the water. I mean, there's so many things you could do, it's unbelievable.
Well,
I mean, we are not telling anybody to try to defy the laws of physics. You cannot do that. However, you can use the laws of physics properly and get all the free energy you want. I mean, more than you want.
Speaking of jacuzzis, and I'm Googling this right now, air pressure using falling water. I'm trying to find the proper terminology for this. To Trump. Okay, so a long time ago, they were taking, I'll just read this from Wikipedia. A Trump is a water-powered gas compressor commonly used for the advent of the electric-powered compressor. A Trump is somewhat like an airlift pump working in reverse. Trumps were used to provide compressed air for bloomery furnaces in Catalonia. And the U.S., the presence of the Trump is a signature attribute of the Catalan Forge, a type of bloomery forge. Anyway, essentially what happened was they had drilled a hole way down into a cavern, They had a water source at the top that, as the water source was falling down inside a chamber, the water would bring in air from the outside using the Venturi effect and pressurize the inside of that chamber. Now you had pressurized air that was in turn used to run basically the equivalence of a pneumatic engine to either turn a mill or a generator or whatever. So if you wanted a jacuzzi that had bubbles in it, you could pressurize the falling water as, you know, you raise it up in the air, fill up a chamber as it evaporated and filled up the tank, and then as that water was falling down, using the Venturi effect where you're sucking air in from the atmosphere, you could produce air pressure that as that water came down back to the bottom, it would pump bubbles into your doggone swimming pool. What do you think?
I love it.
Man, if only we could get the world to listen to what we have to say.
You know, I did something similar to that. I got one of the really large, deep kids' wading pools. I took a half-inch inside diameter garden hose and took an ice pick and stuck a bunch of holes in it. Now, that garden hose would pass through the holes. You know those bricks that have the holes in them inside?
Yeah.
I put a bunch of those around and run the garden hose through those to weight the garden hose down. Hook my air compressor to the garden hose, blew bubbles in the water. Now, the air compressor was in the summertime, so the air is plenty hot, so as you compress it, it causes the air to be hotter, but it contains, it's compressed, and so the heat from the air. The bubbles would warm. They would actually keep the water warm and create a jacuzzi all at the same time from that little air compressor. So you're right.
Yeah.
You can use wind power to compress the air and blow bubbles in your jacuzzi. Now, I mean, again, we're telling people how to use the free energy that's already there. But use physics. Use thermodynamics. Use all of the laws of physics to do what you want to do, free.
Yep, that's what I've been trying to say for a long time. I said, I'm going to prove it once and for all, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Energy is free. Now,
You're not going to prove it. You already have hundreds of times on this show.
Well,
you have already proven it.
I kept my word, didn't I? I kept my word, didn't I?
Until you try it.
That's right. Air pressure, right there. The Trump.
Yeah.
Look it up. It's on Wikipedia. It's out there. Air pressure, water pressure, fluid dynamics, all of it. It's all out there. All the information necessary to prove every single thing we said. You know, free air conditioning, basically evaporative cooling, heat transfer, energy transfer. Everything that we're talking about has been out there right before your very eyes. If you want to start building you a house right now, think of how physics works. Think about basic science. Build your house to work in perfect harmony with nature, and nature will pay your electric bill for you. Plain and simple. Nature don't use money, Raymond.
No, she don't.
But she'll still pay your electric bill if you let her.
Yep. You know, the one thing people don't, a lot of people don't understand about what you're talking about is you keep saying, use this, use that, use this, use that. Well, no one thing that we talk about is enough to power your entire house. But if you combine them all together, plug and play. You combine all these sources, combine them, and you can not only power your house, but maybe one or two of your neighbor's houses as well.
Well, check this out. First off, in the electrical industry or the power energy, your heating and your cooling are the biggest drains on your electric bill.
Well, yes.
Once you resolve heating and cooling, you can pay a smaller bill. Now,
yes.
Even when you're burning firewood, all right, you could take that firewood and you can use that firewood in such an incredibly efficient manner as to which when you burn this firewood, it has absolutely zero waste. And when I say waste, even when it's on the ground, it's not even waste. It's still being recycled. Nature recycles everything. But as that, there's an example that I can give. There's a two-drum wood burner that basically takes the exhaust and reburns the exhaust, same as your catalytic converter in your car would reburn the exhaust, and gives you more heat for the same amount of burn. Now, if you was to actually combine this into a closed system to where you, every bit of heat that thing let off, you're losing a lot of heat up the chimney. All right? And so, why not use that heat to its maximum potential? At least get 70 to 80% of the heat coming off of that wood in order to be able to heat your house in an incredibly efficient manner. Whereas you might burn a quart of wood, you know, a week or something like that, you'd only burn a fraction of that because it wouldn't, you'd be using it in such an incredible fashion. And there's technologies available to literally clean the air before it ever even gets outside. And even if it don't clean it, so what? The creosote that's built up inside your doggone chimney, it's burned. It is a new fuel. It is a new type of fuel. And that creosote, which if you don't keep it under control, will literally get to the point where it will gum up your chimney and it will literally catch on fire and cause you a chimney fire. So you got to buy special stuff to get it up there to clean out your chimney, or have a chimney sweep come by every so often to clean that fuel out of your chimney. Otherwise, you risk a fire. And so when the doggone wood burner's burning and you ain't paid attention to that chimney, meanwhile, it's building up a fuel source inside that chimney, gets plugged up, it gets hotter and hotter inside there until eventually the pipe becomes red hot and it ignites that creosote inside there, and boom, you got a flaming cannon with now creosote that's on fire spitting out of your chimney. And it will get hot enough that it will literally melt the metal that the chimney is surrounded by and set fire to the side of your house.
When I was in North Carolina, I did have a chimney fire one time.
Oh, I had too.
I was burning green pine, and I wasn't burning it complete. The chimney clogged up with creosote, caught on fire. We had a 30 to 40 foot blue flame shooting up top of my chimney. The fire department came out, and it was so hot, they were scared. They did not want to put water on the chimney because it was so hot. They were afraid that by putting cold water on the chimney, the bricks would literally explode. So all they did was just stand around and just make sure. They had one guy up in the attic where he could see the chimney, another guy in the house where he could see the chimney, and just watch it so it didn't catch the wood of the house on fire, because it would get that hot. Fortunately, they just let it burn out.
See?
And it didn't blow up the chimney or anything like that, but we were very lucky. But it was a solid blue flame, 10 inches in diameter, 35, 40 feet high, above the chimney. And the chimney was already 20 feet.
That's a lot of power, a lot of wasted energy. Stephen Gibbons posted into the chat room a link to a picture, a rocket stove mass heater, that basically uses the fuel, basically it's down fed. You just put the fuel in the top, it feeds down, burns, it has an air intake on one side, goes through a couple barrel systems, uses the heat to its maximum potential, and then finally comes down and filters out. It's got an ash pit in there that grabs up any of the crud, and then finally exhausts out the other side.
They make a ammonia and water refrigeration system that actually uses heat to create cold air.
Sure.
And a piece of wood the size of your thigh, from your knee to your hip, that piece of wood would cool your entire house for a week. That's how much energy there is in that piece of wood when it comes to ammonia and water cooling systems.
Well, here's
wood would cool your house for a solid week.
Since you mentioned that, there are in the camping technology and like RVs and stuff, there are propane ran air conditioners and refrigerators. See, a compressor, the only thing a compressor does for your air conditioning is heats up the gas, which pressurizes it. So imagine turning your wood stove into a cooling system for your refrigerator or your freezers.
Now you're talking.
So while you're burning your heat stove, you're heating up the gas that's circulating around it, which is pressurizing it, going through an expansion chamber and transferring that energy away down into the form of cool air that you're running your refrigerator during the same time while you're running your heater.
Isn't that exactly what I said a minute ago?
Yeah.
We're trying to tell people how to use free energy without trying to defy any laws of physics. Any laws of thermodynamics, use the laws of physics, use the laws of thermodynamics, use the laws of electricity, use the laws of plasma, use them properly, and then all of a sudden you will, oh wow, there is such a thing as free energy.
That's right. Yeah. A solar powered air conditioner unit, it would be so incredibly simple to build that it'd be ridiculous. It would require absolutely no compressor.
The heat off the back side of two solar panels would cool your house. The heat off the back side would cool your whole house. You wouldn't even have to use the electricity. Just use the heat. It would cool your whole daggone house. Just two solar panels.
If it's hot or not, get out on your roof, run the piping system, put you in any gas, it doesn't matter. Just use water for that matter, because it will boil into steam, which will pressurize. Then you run that steam through an expansion chamber, and once that gas expands rapidly, it will produce the cooling effect that in turn will go through your radiator core and circulate cool air through your house. So you could use the sun beating off your roof as the compressor technology to actually do everything. You don't need a pump because it's using thermal siphon, because that pressurized gas wants to go somewhere. It
yes,
will
sir.
Escape into the expansion chamber, be allowed to expand rapidly and produce a cooling effect. Stephen Gibbons said, the rocket stove burns the soot and the gases in the second chamber. I thought this was what you were referring to. She says, yeah, look, that's a brilliant picture, Stephen. And, you know, it's something that somebody, your average Joe could build just by studying that doggone picture. You could build it out of junk and make it work. You know, once you understand how all this heat exchange system works, you could use existing ponds on your property, circulate the water from the pond down into your heater system that would be below ground, and you're heating up this water, pressurizing it into a gas, expanding the gas rapidly into an expansion chamber, circulating that cool air. You could use heat during the summertime. You know, you could use solar at the daytime, and at nighttime when the sun ain't out, you could have burned a little firewood down inside this deal and basically cool your house down using that.
Yep.
So, somebody tell me where I'm wrong.
You're not. That's the whole thing. You're going, boy, you're not wrong.
So I think one of my next projects that I'm going to work on is going to be a solar air conditioner that has absolutely no electricity involved. It just uses the sun. And even on a small scale would be brilliant, because imagine if you had this little deal you could sit outside your tent during the summertime, and while the sun was beating down on it, it'd keep your tent cool all the way during the daytime, so that at night it didn't take very long for your tent to cool down. Man, you could have air conditioning in your tent during the daytime. Everybody would be sitting inside their tent, and they'd be like, you guys got to be crazy. It's hotter than heck out. What you doing inside that tent? Because we got free air conditioning, man. Yeah. So somebody out there in the doggone industry, Coleman or whatever, if you're listening, I don't care if you make it, because you're just going to help me out. You're just going to prove what I just said.
Exactly.
Free air conditioning with no electricity, using nothing more than what nature's already provided.
Right.
I'm excited, man.
What about making your barbecue grill that the bottom of it is covered in Peltero devices?
Sure, why not?
why are you cooking after dark and you have a light burning and burning electricity when you cook the bottom of your barbecue grill with Belterio devices and heat sinks and run LED lights and see?
You can heat your water for your shower. You could get electricity all while cooking your food during broad daylight.
Exactly.
Man, where in the heck's all the brilliant people of the world? I'll tell you where they're at. They're at ShazizRadio.com. They're at TCT Radio and Haggy Shack Radio. They're out there, folks. Now all you got to do is just listen to them. They're pointing it out. All the information's out there. It's been around forever and a day. And so whenever you're ready to use that information, then your electric bill will decrease rapidly. And if everybody's electric bill decreases rapidly, then the power companies don't have so much power over you anymore, now do they?
There again, you're also helping them, because in the summertime, they have a critical, very critical, they can't seem to make enough electricity. That's why you have brownouts and blackouts here and there, because they can't make the electricity as fast as people are using it.
Well,
so in truth, you're actually helping the power company. Not everybody can get free electricity because they live in apartment complexes or skyscrapers or whatever, you know. But what about us people that do live out in the country that can do this? Do it,
man.
Just your screen off the electric company.
Look, if these people that live in these doggone skyscrapers and stuff want to pay an electric bill, more power to them. Because if they were, if I was a person that was getting ready to build a skyscraper, I would incorporate all these existing technologies into that building and make that building pay for itself.
Yep.
Because if I didn't have to pay $1 million light bill every year, I would make more money off of when I charge the rent for people staying there. Think about it.
Right.
I turn the doggone windows into power sources. I turn the doggone building itself into a cooling system / heating system, vice versa. I manufactured vents that would, I could slide the refrigerator up inside this vent and it would vent all the heat somewhere else, and I'd utilize that heat to produce electricity or vent it outside, whatever. And then during the summer or winter time when I needed that heat, all I had to do is flip a little switch and turn the shutter open and aim that heat right back into my building, thus forth having to use less electricity to heat the doggone building.
Right.
Man, you ain't got no excuse, even if you live in an apartment complex, not to get free energy. They provided windows. Windows allow light in. Windows allow heat in. You have to have an air conditioning unit to keep your building warm. If you took that access to that window and the heat's coming in and built you a system that would take that heat and using the thermodynamics we just explained as far as energy transfer, heat transfer, turn that energy into what you wanted. I want cool air in my building, but I don't want to pay electric bill to do it. So I'm going to take the sunlight beating through that window that's causing my air conditioner to have to work overtime, and I'm going to learn from heat rising to cold air falling, and I'm going to put a vent up at the ceiling, and I'm going to vent that hot air out the window using solar power that the window's already providing, have that turn into a fan which sucks all the hot air off of the ceiling, out the window, or in through a heat exchanger which turns that hot air into cold air because it heats up water that is being circulated through a system hot enough that it turns around and turns into a gas, and I expand it in an expansion chamber and then turn around and put cold air back in my house.
What's that plastic film that you put on the inside of car windows that it's silvery colored?
Mylar?
Yeah, Mylar, and you can see through it from the other side. So put that on the glass and on your glass windows in the summertime.
Yeah.
On the sunny side. You can still see outside.
Yep.
The heat can't come in because it reflects the heat out.
They actually sell Mylar tape that you can see through one side, it's mirrored on the other side, so you can literally tape your window up where you can still see out and nobody can see in.
Right. And it keeps the heat out of your house.
Yeah. Folks, keep throwing them at me and I'll keep sending them back to you. I'll tell you what, it's out there, folks. If you really want it, it's out there. And if you want to build like tiny houses, before you go build your tiny house, give us a holler on Shaziz Radio and we'll explain to you some processes that you might may or may not have noticed that are existing. There's researchers in the chat room, there's researchers on Skype, there's researchers all over YouTube, and all these people have pointed out things for all these years that the energies freeze right there in front of your face. Folks is trying to defy the laws of physics, and they're trying to find zero point and over unity, and they're trying to get out more than they put in. We're not trying to do that. We're just trying to show you how to use it so incredibly efficient that if you do have to pay electric bill, it's so minuscule, it's basically like, you know, putting pennies in a bucket. And when pennies in the bucket is all that the power company gets, that doesn't make them as tough as they used to be, if you ask me.
Well, it takes the strain off of them. You're actually helping them, really.
Man, I don't care about taking those strain. I hope they have to work hard. I hope their equipment fails. I hope it breaks down. It's not my problem.
Dude.
It comes out of their pocket.
They cannot do what you and I can do. I don't want to hurt the power company.
I don't care about the power company. The power company didn't care about me. They didn't have no mercy on me when they flipped the switch.
I'm not trying to hurt the power company, but I'm not trying to help them either. I'm trying to help people. The people that use the power company that cannot do what you and I do.
Look, I ain't got one single micron of a tear to shed for the power company after what they did to me and my family. They had the power over me. They switched my power off. They destroyed my food in my refrigerator. Caused me all kinds of suffering, misery, because everybody in my house is uncomfortable. Everybody made each other uncomfortable. And I begged and pleaded for them to help me out. And they refused to do it. They wanted a $700 deposit and my light bill to be paid in full, which at the time equivalents, because I was on the so-called plan that basically supposed to build you up some sort of credit after a while, where you get the same exact bill every single month with no surprises, the same price every deal. And when we got behind just by 1 month and they shut our power off, they said I had to pay it all up. So we were talking about $2,000 at least that we had to pay with a $700 deposit in order to get our electricity back on. Your average Joe can't afford it without some sort of outside help. And if it wasn't for somebody giving us some assistance, we would have never got our power back on. And the power company didn't care. They didn't have no safety net for people that fell through the cracks and fell on hard times. And that was back during the time when fuel was going for $4 a gallon. And I was running two gasoline generators trying to keep enough power going in order to run my refrigerators and keep my family cool. And when I called and I begged and pleaded, they didn't want to help. So I told them, I made a promise to the power company. And I'm keeping it. I said, I am going to study everything that there is to know about alternative energy. And when I get that accomplished, I'm going to share it with each and every one of your customers for free. And so when your wallet gets thin, you're going to have me to blame for it. And you can take that to the bank.
I can understand your vendetta. I've been there, not quite as bad as you were, but I've had run-ins with the power company as well. And that's why I have 4,000 watts of solar panels hooked up right now.
I don't care about hurting the power industry, because the power industry is the power industry. They're on their own two legs. If they can't figure out a ways to make their stuff more efficient where they can make more of a profit, that's their problem, because they should have been listening to mad science. We had to give them all kinds of clues.
Right.
I don't call it mad science for nothing. I made a promise to the power company. I made a promise to the people, and I'm keeping that promise, because I've already showed you folks out there that energy is free if you know how to pay attention to what nature's already provided and you utilize that basic science and knowledge that you've learned. You ain't going to pay no power bill.
Anytime anyone, and I'm talking to all the listeners out there, anytime anyone says to you, there is no such thing as free energy. What you need to do is throw your head back and laugh right in their cotton pin face.
Yep.
Laugh in their face.
Yeah.
On this show, almost every week, almost every Saturday, we explain to you how there is no such thing as energy that is not free. There is no such thing as energy that is not free. It's all free energy. You're swimming in it. You are literally drowning in it. It's all over the place. It surrounds you every day. It's inside your body. It's outside your body. It's around your neighbor's house. It's inside your neighbor's house. It's everywhere. Everywhere. It's the apparatus or the machine you need to build to collect one form of energy and turn it into another form of energy that you can use. That's all it amounts to.
That's it. All we're doing is moving energy from one way to the next. When we talk about how you can take heat and make cold, the same thing you could do cold with heat. If you understand pressure, what happens when cold air basically freezes water? Huh?
Right.
Heat expands and cold contracts.
You're right.
And if you got something that's contracting on something, that's producing pressure. That's how things break. That's how, if you got pressure going down on something, basically squeezing it until, because the cold is contracting, it is producing pressure, which in turn is producing what?
What?
Heat.
Heat. Well, see, it doesn't produce heat. All it does is condense it. It doesn't give you any more heat.
No, but it, nonetheless, it's still the same physics.
You're right, but it doesn't actually create heat. You know, all it does is take a lot of heat in a big area and condense it down to a little area, so the actual temperature is hot air. Now, all of a sudden, you cool that because it's hot air than the surrounding air, and now when you release it, you've got cool air.
So all you got to do is learn how the physics and figure out the little techniques on how to extract whatever it is you want out of whatever energy is out there. Because energy, they say, can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be changed. That's all we're talking about. Change it, move it.
You cannot create or destroy energy. However, you can change its size, shape, and or form. So therefore, I mean, come on, man. I mean, we've proven. We're not trying to prove it anymore. We're just repeating ourselves and trying to get people to actually use their head and think. We're not trying to defy any laws of physics. We're not trying to defy any laws of thermodynamics. We're not trying to defy any laws of electricity.
If you had, remember the old style water bottles?
Yep.
Let's say you had it pushed to you had it filled up with air or gas, and you had that water bottle connected to a pipeline, which was connected to a valve where you could actually regulate that pressure right there, and then you froze the water. What would happen to the air inside that bag?
It would pressurize.
That's right. Compress.
It would compress, you're right.
So even using the process of freezing, you can get some work done, man. Come on.
Yep. Isn't that the way you can split a rock by drilling a hole in it, putting water in it, capping it off, and then hit it with a CO2 fire extinguisher and freeze the water, and then bust them right in half?
You fill something up you want to crack over the winter time, you fill it up with water and allow that water to basically freeze and expand, you know, basically crack that rock right in half, man.
You know, that's one.
Why do you think the concrete cracks all the time?
That's what destroys a lot of your concrete highways, more so than driving on them.
Yeah.
If they get a crack, and it rains, fills with water at night, in the wintertime it freezes and busts up chunks of concrete.
Yep, expansion and contraction, doing the thermodynamics thing.
That's why when you drive down a concrete highway and you see all of a sudden you got these black jiggly lines all over the place, it's because they go by with tar and pour melted tar in the cracks so that in the wintertime it doesn't fill up with water and freeze and tear the highway up.
Yep.
There you go.
Well, if you ever been out there in the middle of the summertime barefoot on the asphalt of the street and you had to do this little dance in order to be able to stand there, that's thermodynamics. That's free energy. I think if somebody would have been smart enough to, before they laid down that asphalt, put some pipelines underneath there that would be heating up water instead of having to pay an electric bill to heat the water in the water tanks, or even at the very least supplement the water tank so that you can keep that water warm, you know?
Yeah, people that put in asphalt driveways in the house, I mean, like you said, they could put a pipe in there. It would heat the water up. I mean, they'd have hot water to bathe and shower with. They'd have hot water to heat their swimming pool. They'd have hot water to heat their house in the wintertime.
Yep, and depending on the temperature outside, they might even be able to heat that water hot enough to expand it into gas, which in turn could be expanded rapidly and cause cooling effect.
Yep.
But you've had an air conditioner in your house, but how many people out there actually knew how the doggone thing functioned?
You know, that's the thing. You take your air conditioner in your house, you have the cooling system, and then you have the condensing system that's outside. You can take the heat off that condenser and actually produce electricity with it.
Yeah, and if you go out there and you look underneath your air conditioner, you're going to notice that there's water dripping down there. And depending on the humidity and the temperature outside, they're going to be determined on how much water is out there. While your air conditioner is running in the middle of the desert, it's producing water. It's pulling water right out of the air.
And the thing is, that water is cool.
Yeah.
You can take water and pump it up over the coils, or your condensing coils, and actually increase the efficiency of your air conditioner by 25% to 30%.
And drain
electricity.
And drain said water down into a storage tank, filter it out, and drink it.
Yes, because now it's warm water. It drips out of your air conditioner cool. But you run it over the coils, and it throws the heat off the coils, making the air conditioner more efficient, but it also heats that water up. So now you got hot water to warm your house at night or take a shower with.
Then if you want to really get high tech about it, take same said water, run it through the electrolysis process using solar panels to run the doggone electrolysis portion of it, turn it into hydrogen and oxygen, put that gas inside a chamber, let it expand rapidly, it'll go give you some cooling effect while putting that water back in the same said system.
Right.
Man, you could use hydrogen technology without trying to burn it. You could just expand it and use it to basically separate it, run it through an expansion chamber, recombine it, use it for air conditioning in the form of evaporative cooling or the expansion portion of the cooling, just like your air conditioner functions already. Your air conditioner just recycles the same gas over and over and over and over again. Until it finally leaks out, then you don't have to regas your air conditioner. You realize how many years one air conditioner could last as long as it doesn't leak the gas out?
Right.
So all it's doing is compressing that gas, expanding it rapidly, causing a cooling effect, recirculating the gas, and doing it over and over and over and over again. So why can't you do it? Because it's using heat to do so. Using pressure and heat. Heat produces pressure because heat expands, cold contracts. So when you pressurize the gas, it's going to heat up, it's going to expand, it's going to pressurize, it's going to go through the expansion chamber. The temperature difference between the atmosphere in your room, or even outside for that matter, is enough to cause it to contract, which causes a cooling effect and circulates that cool air through your house.
You know, you made a statement a while ago, and the thing is, I'm not downing you at all, okay? I'm with you. But that statement, you kind of like passed over a little bit too fast for people to wrap their mind around it. And that is, when you split water into hydrogen and oxygen, you do not have to burn that hydrogen and oxygen.
That's right.
To make electricity. Think about this a minute. You don't have to burn it to make electricity. You can burn it, yes, and it will make electricity, or it will run your automobile. But you can make electricity with it before you burn it. And it, I mean, you can do it many different ways. Number one, you can, as you're making the hydrogen oxygen, if you seal it, it will build a pressure, an unbelievable pressure.
That's right.
In a container, you can drain it off to run some kind of a turbine. Or you could take it and put your Jocell or your filter device in deep water, build a bucket system to where the gas would actually go in that bucket, displacing the water, causing buoyancy, pulling on a chain to turn a turbine. Well, as it goes up, it slowly expands because the pressure of the water is less. Therefore, you get even more buoyancy. I mean, electricity does not care about the pressure of water. It does not care. It's, for example, if you use 100 watts of electricity to make X amount of hydrogen and oxygen, you can make the same amount of hydrogen and oxygen at 100 feet below water level. Now, it wouldn't be the same volume as it would if it was only 3 feet deep. But right. As it comes up in a device with buoyancy, it would expand. So you make electricity just by using the buoyancy of the hydrogen and oxygen.
Well, I had a hydrogen cell, and I found out about pressurization with that hydrogen cell the first time the hydrogen cell top blew right off the top of it, not due to ignition, but due to pressure.
Exactly.
When you start, I had a valve on there with my flashback arrestor, hadn't even lit it or anything. I just started up the electrolysis process, which started the hydrogen process, and those bubbles expanding inside there produced enough pressure to literally blow the PVC cap right off of my hydrogen cell.
I'll tell you what, take a wine bottle that has a screw on the lid, okay? Drill a hole in it. Put some kind of heat, some fast deal, quick connect device, and hook it to your air compressor. Get an air compressor that'll go up to 200 psi. I've got one. Put that bottle, hang it by a string inside of a 55-gallon drum, empty with no top, and pump it up to 200 psi. And you're gonna find that bottle won't break. 200 psi will not break that bottle. However, you can put a Jocell inside that bottle with distilled water and baking soda, put that same lid on it, seal it, hang it in there, run electricity to it, and you can bust that bottle. You can blow it up like a bomb. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is electricity will produce hydrogen and oxygen at pressures strong enough to break a wine bottle. Yeah. Now, that is way more pressure than you need to run a turbine to make electricity, or even run an automobile. Just from the pressure alone, you could run an automobile. My God, think about it. A steam engine, you could run a steam engine off of air pressure. You could run a diesel engine off of air pressure.
Yep, get you some Welch's 100% pure grape juice. Put it in a bottle. Don't add any yeast or anything to it. Just put it in a bottle and put it in a warm room with a balloon on the top of the bottle. Walk away and don't come back for a while. Just walk away from it.
Yep.
By the time you finally do make it back to check in on what's going on here, the fermentation of the grape juice will release carbon dioxide, which will pressurize the balloon, and you will come into your room where you have the bottle, and you will find grape juice on the ceiling.
Yeah.
And all over the place. And you if know, you live near ants, you'll have ants everywhere.
All right, you people out there that have gardens and grow sweet corn, you pull the sweet corn off to eat it, the corn on the cob. That corn stalk has more sugar than there is starch in the ear corn. You pull the leaves off the stalk, run through a press, take the juice, put it in a container, put a little yeast with it, and next thing you know, you're going to have alcohol and carbon dioxide. And that carbon dioxide will build strong enough to break that wine bottle. So you can have the pressure carbon dioxide, you can have your alcohol, and your corn food. Now, the leaves of corn can also be fed to your hogs, or your cattle, or your goats, or your horses.
Now, I'm going to say something even crazier.
Once you squeeze the juice out of the corn stalk, you have perfect cattle food or horse food. Perfect. So there is no waste.
Now I'm going to say...
Actually, you can actually dig up the roots of corn wash the dirt off of it and feed it to your animal. There is no part of a sweet corn, no part of sweet corn that is not edible and can be turned into energy.
All right, hold on, Raymond. Because you talked about your wine bottle, pressurized, but good enough to bust a wine bottle, I'm going to say something even crazier. You okay. ready for it?
Yes.
All right, so when you're making your wine, it's producing CO2. The CO2 is building up pressure, which you can use to store into a tank. Take the CO2 off of the wine bottle, store it into a tank with a pop-off valve on the opposite side of it. So, when the pressure builds up enough to hit that pop-off valve, it takes that gas into an expansion chamber and allows it to expand so rapidly that it produces a cooling effect.
Yes, absolutely, positively. We're not going to have mercy. That is fantastic.
So you just turned your wine-making process into an air conditioner unit.
Yes.
And if you can do that with the wine, you can do that with any rotting materials that are releasing anything from methane to CO2 as they rot in a sealed container, which is pressurizing a storage container with a pop-off valve that will only allow it to reach a certain pressure before that valve opens.
Oh, man. Hey, how about this? At the pop-off valve, it goes through a pipe into your expansion chamber, right?
Yep.
But in that pipe, you put a little turbine to make electricity. So now you're making electricity, cool air, and carbon dioxide, and alcohol, all at the same time. Or methane gas.
Yep.
I mean, come on, man. This, we're not trying to over do things. We're not trying for over unity here. We're trying to do unity, you know? Just make it more efficient, that's all.
Well, whenever your fuel source runs down, you drain your wine out and you pour in more grape juice and restart the process. And in the process, you take the CO2 that's produced from it and you utilize it for your energy needs.
All right.
You could do it with corn when they make, silage or whatever. You ever notice how nasty it smells around a silage plant? Where they make corn and turn corn into rotted corn, essentially, because it's the cows like it for some reason?
Yeah. If it's rotting, it stinks. But if it's just fermenting, it doesn't.
Well,
I think it's sweet when it's fermenting.
When it's rotten, it's producing what? Heat.
Well, exactly.
So, composting, making wine, any fermentation process, all of this kind of stuff right there is producing energy right there before your very eyes.
Right.
Your septic tank produces methane, which could be utilized. There ain't nothing wasted, people.
You know, the thing is, people walk outside and they have a vent on their septic tank, and all of a sudden the wind's blowing in a different direction.
It stinks.
Oh, no, that's not methane, that's sewer gas.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. But methane is odorless and colorless.
Yeah.
You can't see it.
But nonetheless,
they're in with methane gas is natural gas.
Even so the stink is.
They put the odor in it so that you can detect a leak.
Even the stink, man, from your septic tank is another form of energy.
Yes, it is.
See, let me think about this for a second. In wells, there are some wells that are sulfuric that is smelling, and it's because there are little microbes inside there that basically, as they're eating away at the metals, will produce a odor, all right, and it's sulfurous smell. And
right.
sulfa, whatever they call it. Anyway, they have figured out that you can change, like in your hot water heater, if you're living off of a well system and you're getting that sulfa smell out of your water as you're trying to take a shower, your water stinks just by changing the anode inside there to a different metal, like some of them have magnesium instead of, different types of metal in there, and that won't produce the stink whenever the little microbes are actually doing their damage to the metal.
Right.
So,
truly love it.
So anyway, look how fast algae grows. If you want to produce a fuel source, then make you a little algae tank and basically produce your own algae.
Oh, man, wait a minute. You know, there's a thing called aquaponics where you raise fish and plants in conjunction with each other.
Yeah.
Because the fish poo and pee is fertilizer for the plants, right? Well, a lot of people nowadays, they really press hard on the tilapia. The only thing is tilapia are very warm water fish, and cold water will kill them. But there is a fish that is it's a pest. It's a blight in the Mississippi River. It's called a silver carp because it eats algae and plankton. It's not a carp. People don't eat it because of the name carp. The only reason it's called a carp is because it has bones like a carp. A little fine bones. But they grow to 5 and 6 pounds in 1 year. They lay eggs 3 to 4 times a year. 200 to 250,000 eggs each laid. They're a blight in the Mississippi River because people think they're killing off the game fish, but they're not. They're eating up all the food the game fish eat. And they're beautiful meat. They grow fast, and they can live in cold water. Therefore, if you use silver carp in a aquaponic system, you would have no problem. You just simply stick them in there. That's it. And it's great food. You get natural fertilizer for your vegetables. I mean, come on, people. Wake up.
Well, everything out there has a purpose and a use. And, even duckweed, which basically takes over a pond after... predators such as snapping turtles and what's some big ugly birds that look like a look like a crane, but they're not. They're
A buzzard.
No, not a buzzard. What the heck are those dang birds called? Herring.
Yes.
Herrings are obnoxious. Anyway, nonetheless, when a herring or a snapping turtle or other predators clean out all the fish, the duckweed takes over because fish like perch and bluegill and carp will actually eat that duckweed. Well, that duckweed can be turned into a fuel, a fertilizer, and a food source.
Right.
Because what duckweed does is it takes all the nutrients out of the pond and basically kills off a pond because it's basically overtaking the pond and doing what it naturally does, and it's full of nutrients. Now,
right.
Don't go out and just eat raw duckweed because it's got little spiny stuffs on there to make you miserable. All right, you have to cook the stuff first and learn how to do it before you do it so that you don't make yourself sick. But it's a food source. You can dehydrate it, use it for fish food, flakes. Fish will eat it naturally. You could use it for biofuels, all kinds of stuff. So even what you would normally think is obnoxious, it's a fuel source.
You know, duckweed is not algae, but it's similar to algae in that under the proper conditions, it will double its volume every 24 hours.
Yes.
Talk about food source.
It will it will destroy a pond.
Yes. Under the right conditions, temperature, oxygen, whatever, the proper conditions, it will double its volume every 24 hours, and so will algae.
And in wintertime, whenever you see it's all gone, you think it died off, it didn't. It just sunk to the bottom. See, in wintertime, duckweed goes to the bottom of your pond, and then during the springtime, it pops back up again.
Yeah.
So, it's still there. But... Folks, that's the Mad Science Show for today. I hope you learned something. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope that if you did learn something, that you pass this information on to somebody else involved in alternative energy. If somebody out there is interested in building a small community and wants it to be super energy efficient, working in perfect harmony with nature, you came to the right spot. Pass these podcasts on, share them on your social media networks. That's how you support Shaziz Radio and Haggy Shack Radio and TCT Radio and all the other affiliated networks combined. You support them by sharing your information with each other. You network with one another. You take these ideas, you implement them, and you come back and you tell everybody how it worked for you. It worked out well, or we had a problem, and we troubleshoot the problem, and we find you a solution. That's what it's all about. Solution-based ideas from all the researchers and all the people that post the links in the chat room and such. Please do this for us, and we will help you find the energy independence that the world claims they need. We will be self-contained, and we'll work in perfect harmony with nature. That way, everybody's happy. The environmentalists are happy. The only ones that won't be happy, unfortunately, Raymond, is the power companies, because they won't get as much money as some things. I almost cried a tear of laughter.
I love that.
All right. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. Share the shows, please, and thank you. Have a wonderful day. Take care. Meet us on the Knights of the Round Table, same time, different day, Sundays, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time. Thank you.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.